Welcome to Racing Roots with Ham. Live every Monday evening, we have a new guest
from the racing world with their stories, their paths,
their racing roots.
With our host, David Ham.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Racing Roots with Ham. Give me just one second. There we go. Studio live. Yes, we are live here in the Randy Marion studio on 550 AM, 92.9 FM. And we got a big evening. We're going to have to jump right in head first, because if we don't, we're going to run out of time. I think we might be here at about 10 o'clock.
It's looking like. And we got a full house.
Yeah, we definitely got a full house this evening. We got, first of all, my lovely wife is to my right. And I mentioned that, you know, because it is our anniversary today.
Wow.
A full
anniversary. How many years, babe?
We made it a full 15, something like that.
Wow. Ah, you're crazy.
How many was it?
Six.
Six.
Six yeah. years. And here's your anniversary present right here.
Aww,
it's
you're
a
so
smarty
special.
Because it helps you to be smart. I mean, not
so
that
I'm
you
not
need
already
help.
Smart.
That's not what I mean. See, I do this every show. I just have to put the shovel down.
Does it work?
It needs to be the one time.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right.
But if you don't recognize that voice, that's Mr. Bill Blair is in gracing us with his presence, and his mic needs to be pulled a lot closer than that, because he's kind of like a whispering Bill as it is. So, yeah, there you go. Adjust your mics and have that ready, because we also got Ronnie Thomas and Skip Pollock right there.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, yes.
And y'all made a long trip to come down here. Skip did, anyway. All the way from Minnesota. Is that how you say it up
there?
Lots of O's. Minnesota.
There you go.
Okay. Just stretch out the O a little bit, right?
It's Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah. The land of 1,000 lakes.
10,000.
Right? Oh, 10,000.
What'd you say?
They grew a lot more. 10,000. Yeah, some icebergs melted, you know, about 15 million years ago. No, it was 15,000 years ago. I'm sorry. Man. Okay, these numbers going through my head. We got a lot of number of people in here. We also got Bryson Davison with us.
Yes, good to be here.
Yeah. Good to see you, as always, there, Bryson. Say that again.
Good to be here, as always.
Yeah. And then we got Christian Wilson to my left.
Hello.
How you doing there, Christian?
Doing fantastic.
All right, good deal.
What hat you wearing today?
North Wilkesboro.
There you go.
North Wilkesboro. All right, good deal. Yep, so because, you know, North Wilkesboro raced this week, as we all know.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Bryson was there.
I was there too.
Christian was there.
Hung out together on Tuesday. Wednesday I was filming, but
I was there in spirit.
Yes.
Yeah, I tried to get David to go Wednesday.
Oh, it was a cluster of people Wednesday, but it was a good thing. You know, there was a ton of people there. I think they said over 20,000 or something like that. But
22.
Yeah. They were way past capacity, but that's a good thing as far as the future of racing up there at Wilkesboro. But I did run into Christian on Tuesday, and he was taking some cool videos and some pictures and stuff down in the pits. So, yeah, that was a fun thing.
All right, very good. So, speaking of events, Bill, are you wanting to talk about that right now? You want to jump right into your event going on this weekend?
Mount Airy, North Carolina's Moonshine and Racers Reunion, September the 10th. That's about next Saturday, ain't
it?
Already here.
A couple things I want to mention. I'll get up here to the mic so you can hear me. But we have a silent auction there this year, and I just brought this to give an example of what some of the stuff would be, and I believe you said that camera there would show it.
I can fix, actually. So we got Facebook camera here, too. Facebook and Twitch and LinkedIn and Twitter. So
will there be a lot
let
of
me have that. Okay. I'll pass it over there. Or I'll just show it up here to the camera. There you go. So what is this, Mr. Bill?
That's a program.
All right.
And here's another. This is a program
for
Pocono Race.
So I better be careful with this. This one is from 1951.
And this is 1952.
And this one's 1976. All right. And then 1952.
And they're hard to come by. The yearbook, NASCAR yearbooks.
Yeah. The oldest one I got is like 1968.
Okay.
So that's very nice. I'll just take these with me.
I don't think so.
I'll donate. I'll make a donation.
You won't see the wrapper come out of. I think it said $450. you get back to it.
Yeah.
But
fine.
Anyway, there'll be a lot of this up there, and it'll be car parts, race car parts on auction from different teams. And our buddy Ed Heinz goes around each year and gathers this up, and it goes for a good cause. These proceeds go for the Wall of Fame, And we had to pay for the insurance and buy the drivers that signed autographs, the drivers and team members, crewmen and crew chiefs and promoters. They'll all That's be good. There. It'll be 100 people signed autographs. And, of course, we provide their meal for lunch there at the tent. The tent's located on North Main Street in Mount Airy on the east side of the street. But like I say, there'll be over 100 people signed autographs. And can I see this just a minute?
Thank you all for the happy anniversaries. And I was just kidding about the 15 years. It does seem like that sometimes, though. But we know each other for 40 years. So,
you know. Well, I knew. And I believe her.
No, it's been longer than that, honey.
Okay. 46. Yeah.
If I tell, we'll tell our age, but yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It's been since we were, seven years old.
Yeah.
This is the first this year NRA and ICAST Radio. A gentleman named Dan Henson will be there. He represents, he's a field manager and recruiter for NRA, representing NRA. And they have a Daisy Eye Rifle that they're going to give away this year. If you renew a prescription, a three-year prescription, and... or else take out a new prescription. And they'll give you a ticket, and the drawing will be at 1 o'clock. You need to be there to win it. But this rifle's called the Bill Blair Signature Series, and the number, serial number is 02. And it's a Daisy Red Ryder gun, and I think that it's on the stock. It says Bill Blair Signature Edition, and it's got the North Carolina seal on it. But that'd be something that you'll want.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, Mount Airy is a big NRA town. That's where they have the big convention every year. So be sure and think about that. We need to support NRA. They help support our event up there. And we appreciate what they're doing. And Mr. Ronnie Thomas will be there to sign autographs. You're 78.
I have my race car there. I'm 81 Pontiac.
81 Pontiac.
Yeah, original car we ran, we restored.
Okay.
A couple of times.
And it, we look forward to seeing it. It's a beautiful car, folks.
Thank you. We'll be there. There's going to be a crowd of cars there this time. Yeah. I'm just going to have heard. I mean, I feel like I might be wrong. It'll be over 100 cars there in attendance.
I hope so.
Nice.
But it'll be a lot of vintage cars.
Talk to my good friend here and Skip Pollock up there. And
good evening, Bill.
Yes, sir. And enjoy. And then my hero, Dave Hamm. And my real hero is Tracy. And then my boss and real hero sitting over yonder.
Yeah.
The lady who does all the work for putting this deal together at Mount Airy, North Carolina, sitting right over there. Her name is Sheila Blair.
Yes. Mr. Blair has definitely sung your praises, Miss Sheila.
He does all the time. Always singing praises of Miss Sheila. Yeah, I know, Tracy, you're going to have to do a little better than that.
I'm going to have to do better?
A little bit more.
We know who the backbones are. That's all we have to say.
You bet. She works hard at that, too. Mm-hmm. And she's tired. I mean, we need a vacation after this deal, but we so enjoy it and seeing the people, and we just love our friends and our people and love these old racers. And there's a purpose for us doing that. It's the love for the early day stock car racing and we never forget him, and like your father, you remember Jabe Thomas. I loved him to death, and Jabe, he was such a great guy, and I always looked forward for him coming down, picking up the motor. We just so enjoyed. I should have done that and overcharged the thing. Not that he ever paid me, but
we still got overcharged. He says that, but he always.
Well, he's paying back now.
Did you ever pay for the last motor you got?
No, and I just wonder, you reckon he turned that in? He always wanted cash. Does that mean that got turned in the IRS or not?
I think he's been doing the tax write-offs for the past 20 years.
You got a 5% discount for cash.
I'm still writing you off.
That's it. Hey, so Bill, you got a minute to tell us about how this came about.
Well, it's an interesting story. Did you ever go to Hillsboro, Okanagan?
Yeah.
For their event?
2010.
Okay, well, originally I got introduced to a gentleman at a service station down there that I bet Bill Mainham and Gary Lou Allen was on the way to Wilmington, North Carolina to give a talk about early day stock car racing. And we happened to stop at the service station there at the intersection. And the guy running it told us about the Okanagan Speedway. They were going to clean it up and have a big show there. And they did, and we went, and I guess it lasted for 8 or 10 years or so, something like that. Yeah. Well, anyway, it was a great event to start with, and then they expanded, brought other people in, and the next thing you know, there was about 8 or 10 people running that show and not enough Indians working, and it just ceased to exist because, what can I say, this too many Indians, I guess. I don't know, but it was a great event. And when they quit, the question was asked, what are we going to do now? And so I thought about Mount Airy and talked to some people about it and got mixed opinions. So one day, Sheila and I were up there, and we asked this lady at the embroidery shop there in Mount Airy about this lady that owned that property out there at the old Mount Airy racetrack, built in 1946. It closed up in 49. The promoter, Mr. Golden, he ran off with the money.
Oh, no.
So it never reopened. But anyway, the lady at the shop, the embroidery shop, said right there on the corner. So I walked over there to meet Miss Gail Hyatt. Gail Hoheit, and she was busy, and when she got through the customer, she said, are you waiting to see me? I said, yes, ma'am. I told her who it was. She said, well, somebody was in here asking about doing something out at that racetrack and all, but they never came back. So I explained to her what we were trying to do and wanted to do. We're looking for a place to replace what we used to do down at Hillsboro. So she said, well, I don't see why we can't do it here. So they got with the event director, set a date, and myself and Sheila, Ed Heinz came along and visited with us at that first event. And he was at the meeting. And the event director was Phil Marsh, Jenny Smith from the visitor center, and Gail Hyatt, and myself and Sheila. So we sat right there and put this deal together. And it really worked nice. Those people up there are really behind it. The Downtown Business Association is 100% behind it. All of the police department, sheriff's department, just everybody's really in Mount Airy. They're so friendly. Of course, this Barney's town, you know, I guess Mayberry. And they still got Barney up there in that cop car riding around. And he's a great guy, you know. And he'll be leading the parade this year, by the way, him and the sheriff's department.
Okay.
But that's how it came about. We just need a place to go for us racers to get together. And our desire was really to remember the early days of stock car racing.
Yeah.
And the guys who used to participate in it, like Bonnie Flock, Red Byron, Tim, Bob Flock, Ed Samples, Lloyd C., and on and on, you know. And, you know, that's when it started with the 39 Ford and all. And when I think of a modified, I still think of those 39 Fords. I see it in my mind. And, of course, a lot of that's got a local flavor because so many of those guys up there raced in Mount Airy. My daddy went up there raced, Buddy Schumann, and just on and on and on, you know. Your daddy never did. I think he come along later, many years later, right?
Late 50s.
Well, speaking of Flocks, Peggy Flock will be with us next week.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. She's daughter of what, Tim?
Tim Flock.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, but that's how it got going, and we got the Wall of Fame that really is dedicated to the early day stock car racers. And that's becoming a big, big thing. And people from everywhere, out of state, are coming to make pictures of that, just walk around there and talk about it and make pictures. It's just a beautiful Wall of Fame with all the pictures on the wall and the names of people that we're honoring each year. It's on the old post office wall there, built in 1900, right on Main Street. And it's just a great place to come and visit. But you can talk to people there now, and they know all about what's going on about the Moonshine Racer Reunion. And we'll have some moonshiners there, too.
Okay.
Big Chuck, the moonshiner.
Some moonshiner.
We'll be there from Discovery Channel. Rick, Paul Murphy. Buck Nance from Copper Steel.
Okay.
And the Bentonville Hillbillies, I believe it is. Donnie Benton from Kentucky. Hmm. He'll be there. But just a lot going on. And Ronnie tells me there's going to be over 100 race cars on the street. And I know there's a lot of them coming. They begin going to be there starting about Wednesday because we've got a big parking lot for them. So anybody listening, if you got a race car and want to bring it to Mount Airy, be there before 9 o'clock Saturday morning.
Okay.
And we'll put you on Main Street. We've got a lot to unload them and drive up there. You'll be escorted up there on Main Street and get out and enjoy the event. The autograph session starts at 10 o'clock. When the ceremonies will be held there on Main Street in front of the tent, and the mayor will introduce the program, and then we'll go into autographs. And then at 12, we'll break for lunch. About 1 to 1:15, we'll start on the award program. And of course, the silent auction will be there, and event T-shirts. They're beautiful this year. Always got a picture of Mount Airy, and you got a picture of the Mount Airy flyer there.
The official flyer. And you got your jacket on, I see.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one that everybody's going to get. That's
if you're on the Wall of Fame.
If you're on the Wall of Fame.
You're eligible to have one of these.
Get this here.
Show up okay?
There you go. Yeah. Very good.
And so.
I see Skip got his. It's, I think it was like a medium or something.
A medium?
I'm losing weight.
You didn't get a medium, did you?
He got a large.
No, I got a large.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, David just didn't want to tell you. He's actually an extra large.
It's extra girth.
Extra. Well, so if it didn't
extra
fit me, then it
girth. It's extra muscular.
But to sum it up, David,
yes, sir.
I won't take up too much of your time here. You need to talk to these guys. But the silent auction, I think at 2 o'clock we need to we'll close that, and the people can come check and see if they won their program, whatever they bid on. There'll be a lot of items there for that. And all the, as I said, the proceeds will go to that. Plus, Rex White. We're gonna give him some money this year. And a dollar out of each T-shirt sale goes to Rex White. Mm. And we're going to have some models there for sale, little die-cast models, whatever you call them, both the die-cast and the kind you build.
Okay.
Got to have a glue box to do that. But anyway, that'll be there. And did I miss anything, Ms. Sheila? I got it all? Okay.
So who else has their own very own Daisy Red Rider BB gun? Well, it's might not be a Red Rider, but it's a Daisy.
It's a Daisy.
Yes, yeah, Daisy Bill Blair instead of Red Rider.
Now, how do you get that?
How do I get it?
How do you
gotta
get
win it?
Oh, well, let me tell you.
Bill's a shooter.
Are you an NRA member?
No.
Well, you come to Mount Airy next Saturday. You'll be there. We'll sign you up, and then you can get a ticket to be able to participate in the drawing to win one of these. I think they're going to give two of them.
I got four little grandkids that probably get nutso on that.
Well, that'd be all right.
Then you better hold me to it.
I am.
I thought you were asking how you get your own BB gun, but no. Because, you know, he's got history with the, it was Lash LaRue and, and what was your other friend's name?
Sunset Carson.
Sunset Carson, yes.
They're my buddies.
Okay.
We used to hang out with them. Cecil and I did.
Yeah.
And that was, and my first, one of my first heroes was Superman.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
That's why I got a broke nose.
That's where he, he put on the cape and.
George Reeves.
Well, no, that was a Superman, but he tried to be Superman by
jumping out of the
I thought I got me a cape put on. It was my mother's wax tablecloth. I made a cape out of it.
Did that work?
Didn't work out too good.
Not too good.
I got back in a hayloft. We had big dairy, you know, and that dairy barn milked 70 cows at a time. And I got back in the hayloft, got me a 50-foot running start, and I come out of that hayloft. Bailed out of there, just wide open, put my arms back, you know. And I started flapping harder and harder, and nothing happened. I hit the ground, bounced two or three times, and then I passed out.
That's right.
Come to, blood everywhere on my face.
Yeah.
Broke my nose. Broke my collarbone.
Too good.
No, it didn't work.
Your dad got a pretty good laugh out of that.
Oh, yeah, he thought that's funny.
Yes.
They laughed for a year about that.
The whole town did.
That's funny.
Yeah. Very good. Well, that's Mr. Bill Blair. Thank you for.
Thank you very much.
And looking forward to it. We'll be there. We'll be there Friday night for the dinner, and then we'll be there Saturday for the all day. And we're staying Saturday evening. So
Some of us drivers and crewmen and folks that like the old days, we're getting together on Friday night just to
have a
jam session.
Yeah. Very good. I should bring my banjo.
Oh, Lord.
We'll do that. We need a banjo player.
You might better bring the harmonica instead of the banjo. He's a little warped.
Okay. I got two. One of each hand or whatever. Okay. Anyway, back to the show. Ronnie Thomas and Skip Pollock. I'll tell you what we're going to do, though. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be right back, and we'll talk to them. And hear, you're going to hear a bunch of stories, so y'all just stay tuned. Don't you go anywhere. And we're back to Racing Roots with Ham. And we have this evening, we've got Mr. Bill Blair in with us. We got Ronnie Thomas and Skip Pollock. If you don't know Ronnie Thomas was the 1978 Rookie of the Year in NASCAR racing. And Skip Pollock was a crew chief for Joe Frazone, 1974-ish, I guess.
75,
okay. And you also drove in short tracks. Was it Elko's?
Minnesota, pretty much, yeah.
Okay. I always think about Elk, Wisconsin, or whatever it is. Or but Elko up in Minnesota.
Elko Speedway.
Minnesota. Drag that O.
That's right. Yes. You know who corrected that? That was Terry Anderson.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'd send a picture or email or something. It was always you guys in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. <You know. laughs> So I'm kind of right in line with that then. Saying it the right way. Yeah.
I wanna start something out here if I could.
Yeah,
about,
go for
about
it.
My buddy here, Ronnie.
Yeah.
I knew his daddy quite well when I was a crew chief down there, and his dad was marvelous man. Yeah. Marvelous, very soft spoken. Last time I saw him was 1977.
Yeah.
Try. At World 600, and him and I sat side by side on the pit wall. Mm. And he had his loafers on, and we sat there and just talked and talked and talked. And he come up with their Laguna, and we had a Laguna also, and his car was just beautiful. And I told him that, and I said, "My goodness," I said, "this car is just gorgeous," and I never forgot that. Ronnie and I got together, we got hooked up three years ago. At Mount Airy, and we're talking on the phone. I said, "I got a picture of your daddy's car that I've had since 1977. And I says, "It says Bill Blair Automotive on the trunk." He says, no, that never happened. Hmm. So I took my camera and I took a picture of it and I sent it to him. He says, "My God, it does say that on the trunk." He never even had a picture of it.
Back of the deck lid.
Sit that over here in front of you. Sorry. There we go.
Okay. Gibbs, you know, you never paid for that motor.
Oh, is that the one?
That's the one.
Never got paid?
There we go. All right.
So, Dano and I, we did the first Mount Airy. And we walk up the hill, and here's this hauler sitting there on Main Street. And there's this big old Pontiac sitting on there. And I look at Danny. Danny and I were walking around. We're looking at it, and I'm looking it all over and underneath and everything. And I'm just making mental notes in my brain. And here out in the middle of the street is Ronnie talking to a couple fellas out in the middle of the street. And I kind of look over at him, and he's talking away. And all of a sudden, he looks away, and he kind of looks over at me. And he goes back to talking to these people, and I'm leaning against the corner of the hauler. And Dano, he's walking on, he's looking at the car and everything. And I'm looking underneath it, and I'm like, "Wow, this is really cool." Finally, Ronnie gets done talking to these guys, and he comes over and he says, "Am I supposed to know you?"
Oh.
And I says, "I sure the hell hope so." And he says, "Well, give me a hint." And I says, "Joe Frazone." Well,
wow.
It was like old home days.
Yeah.
And ever since then, we've been very, very close. We talk at least once a week. He's got a nifty little museum at his house, and he says, "Well, you got this, you got that." And I says, "Yeah, I got this. Send it to me."
Yeah.
So we've added to his collection, and we've become very, very close. And it's one of the highlights of coming to Mount Airy is reconnecting with that family.
But what he didn't tell you was one thing you said when he came over to the truck looking, and he looked under the Pontiac of mine, which I got this car from Richard Childress, and he went built a new car in, I think it was 78, and I got his older Monte Carlo, and that's what I, of course, started out with my dad's Laguna, like you talked about, but then we got this car, and of course, we cut it down. A lot of people will not know, in 1980, NASCAR went from the 115-inch to the 110-inch wheelbase cars, and a lot of people built new cars. Some people took and just chopped 5 inches out of their car, and we actually did ours at our service station in Christiansburg. We made it cut 5 inches out of it, and it's a rear steer Banjo Matthews car, and he came up and he was looking at that. I ain't gonna tell you how the words he said. I remember like yesterday. He said, "That's a so-and-so rear steer car," which you will know the difference between a rear steer and a front steer, but that
I
was the old.
I picked it up instantly.
How about that?
Because that's what we built up at Tiger Tom's.
Okay.
Was rear steer Ford facsimile clips.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "It's a rear steer." Yeah. You know, and he just went, "What?" Yeah. You know, but it's so many neat things that happen up at Mount Airy. Mm-hmm. Just with Bill and Sheila and the wall and all these race cars and seeing people that, and I'm pushing this thing. Because Dano and I, we look forward to it all year. If we don't do nothing else, we do this. People that I haven't seen in 35 years.
And everybody is so friendly.
Right. Walter Ballard
drivers,
was there. And
Walter was there last year.
That was fabulous.
71 Rookie of the Year.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and Walter was there, and I introduced myself, and he thought a little bit, you know. And I said, "I was Joe Frazone's crew chief." Oh, you know, and that was great. Yeah.
And you hadn't seen Joe Frazone in 43 years, I guess.
No. Joe passed away not that long ago.
I mean back. But when you saw him the first time after not seeing him for so many years.
Oh, right.
It'd been 40 years, 40 plus years.
You know, and he stayed down south, and I moved back home. And then, you know, later on, Blackie Wang got a hold of me, and he said, I'm moving all my stuff home. He said, I need help. So we got a car out to my shop, and I got a hold of Dano. I said, we got some body work to do here and painting and stuff. And so Danny's been with us ever since. You know, but seeing all these people at Mount Airy is just has really rekindled a lot of things. I've gotten in my archives, and I give away, well, last Mount Airy, I gave away over 250 pictures of Joe Frazone stuff, the highlights and different things. We did the technical NASCAR Technical Institute and gave away a whole pile of them there. And another gentleman I hooked up with was Will Cronkright, who was Joe Frazone's crew chief, two before me.
73 maybe.
With the Dodges. And we've hit it off just great. And we talk quite regularly.
So do you know the story of whenever there was the biggest wreck at Talladega, I believe it was 72 thereabouts, and whenever Joe went around the track, and then somebody ran into him after that, and he got so mad, and then he come into pits, and he was bleeding, and but he was telling Will he was going back out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't get out of the car.
Yeah, and Will says, what color is the driver's suit did you wear today? And Joe says, white. And he says, here's the only reason it stopped is they're putting a windshield in the car.
Yeah.
And Blackie or Joe's giving Will a whole ration of crap. And the only way, Will pulled a coil wire.
Oh.
He's knocked him on his butt, but it's the only way that the car wouldn't go. And they got him out of the car, and they hauled him, and he was blood from head to foot.
Yeah. The driver's uniform, I guess, was turned red.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. So anyway, we was at the museum, and we're up in front, and we're doing interviews, and I'm up there, and I stand up, and we did some replica Joe Frazone racing shirts. Red ones with the stripes and all the patches and the Frazone 18 on. And I stand up and I walk up there, and a voice in the back of the room says, I want one of them shirts. It was Will Cronkright.
Oh, how about that?
You know, and yes. I yelled back. I said, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
And he says, bet me.
Yes. You know, Will was up here.
Wednesday.
Yeah. We were up here. We ate up across the street here.
He is such a neat man.
Yeah, for sure. I was working on some of his postcards for him to go take down.
Tell him about what Joe did to his car when he didn't qualify at Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
When he beat it up.
Oh, the Pontiac?
Yeah.
I was not there for that. But the story goes is NASCAR won one type of car for every manufacturer. And he got with Crawford Clements, who's a Pontiac man with Buck Baker all them years, and they decided to build a Pontiac. And they had all these promises. Oh, NASCAR's going to help you. Pontiac Motor Division's going to help you and all this stuff. So they put this Pontiac together. And it was fast. But the deck lid wasn't right on it, and he'd spin it out and back it in the wall. And they wouldn't let him make the spoiler bigger or nothing else. And finally, he went out there, and it wouldn't work. And he said, that's enough. And he got a hold of the jack handle. That's where he got his nickname, Jack Handle Joe. Oh. And he started whooping up on this thing. And Crawford Clements says, okay, you can do anything you want, but don't hit the windshield or the roof. Because that's the same as a Chevelle. You can do anything else you want, but don't touch that stuff. Wow. So he went after it, and the media was taking pictures and everything. When he got all done, a bunch of the media come over and says, well, we didn't get that. So they had him do it again.
Oh. I was standing there watching that. It was on the other side of the workbench from us, me and Pascal and them. And he didn't qualify fast enough to make the race.
That's right.
And he pulled it into the garage area and got out and walked over to that jack under the bench and pulled it out, reached down and undid the little screw there and pulled the jack handle out about this long. And he just nonchalantly walked around side that car and started whipping the hell out of it. And Dick Beatty walked up, the inspector, did like this and watched him do all that. Didn't tell him to stop or nothing. And he spent about 5 minutes or so whipping on that car. Then he laid it, jack handle down. I don't know if he put it back in the jack or laid it down, but Beatty then stepped forward and said, that'll be $500.
Was that Beatty or Gasway?
Beatty.
Was it Beatty? Okay.
That was Beatty.
Gosh.
I remember, see, Joe was used to running pretty good.
He had good runs.
And when he missed the show in that car, I think that really upset him.
They call him Cement Head.
It's a fact. That's a fact.
Daddy owned a cement company, didn't he?
Yes. His father owned Mario Frazone Cement Company in Minneapolis. And they had the city contract for the city of Minneapolis for all cement work.
Yeah.
So Joe was milking the heck out of that deal.
Well, nobody messed with Joe Frazone. I mean, he's a big guy. You didn't want to tangle with him.
I respected him tremendously, more than people understood. But, you know, people are funny. And he had a temper.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
He
Italian.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. But he spent a lot of company money on it. They had an airplane for a while, and he would fly tires up to us in Minnesota that nobody could get up in Minnesota, and they were gumballs and, you know, just spent money frivolously. He bought the big Holman and Moody tandem hauler, and he bought another ramp truck, and he had the other Ford truck that Will Cronkite drove. I mean, he spent money on racing.
Mm-hmm.
And Crawford worked on the stuff, and John Green worked on the stuff, and everybody he could hire that worked on the car, mm-hmm. or cars.
Yeah.
But it was a learning experience, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Sure. Are you bringing any cars tomorrow? I mean, Saturday on the list.
No, I'm bringing pictures. I love giving out pictures and asking people if they remember Joe Frazone,
mm-hmm.
and how many years ago he passed away.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of really neat pictures of the Laguna and the Dodge. And the last sponsor he had on a Dodge was Pizza Hut. And I've got beautiful pictures of that. I've got some of the Winston girls. I got a picture of Buck Baker and I at Daytona kneeling next to the car when Buck got the ride. And he crashed, but that's my keepsake. And then I got another picture of the Nova and a Fender. It says Chief Mechanic Skip Pollock, and that's my moniker for that whole deal. The proof's in the picture. You can't
that's
lie.
Right. Yeah, for sure. You gonna bring some Smarties?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We got the stockpile on the Smarties.
So
everybody you run into, you say, "Here, this might make you a little bit smarter."
Right. I walked in here with a half a bag, and I think I'm going home with none.
Back to Walgreens.
Back to Walgreens. You know.
Yeah.
Me and Ronnie need a case of more.
We will.
Yeah.
So, that's useless cool. knowledge. I was watching Price is Right today, and it's their 50th anniversary. And the first contestant won a 72 Chevelle, valued at 50-something thousand.
Sorry, was their anniversary show or something?
Yeah,
right?
It was their 50th anniversary show.
So what are you going to buy your wife?
I already bought her. What did I buy? Oh, you don't know.
He hasn't. This is the first time he said anything.
Listen, we got a Dollar General right down the street, and it's perfect. It's around in there.
Christian's laughing.
7 minutes to get there, and it's perfect.
There you go.
They got everything in there is what I'm getting at.
Well, that's crazy.
There's plenty of people wishing you a happy anniversary.
Rose Holman, there's Dickie Dennis on there. Some other people that are commenting. Greg Gould says, "Good evening, y'all." Jim Dooley says, "Great show. Love the history." Mike Lumgarner says, "Great bunch there." So, you know, a lot of people tuning in. Make sure you comment, if whether you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you are. Make sure you send a comment down below. Tell us where you're watching from. One thing real quick, Joe Frazone, I actually have a diecast of his 18 Dodge Daytona, mm-hmm. the wing car. And then the wreck y'all were talking about, Talladega, that was 1973. And the Talladega 500, that's the one, it was the one where Wendell Scott wrecked. They have that car at the Winston Cup Museum, mm-hmm. and you could still see it. But yeah, that's all I have to say.
So that Dodge, the red Dodge, when Joe went, they did the Pontiac and stuff, they sold that car to Buddy Arrington.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, that's where it went. And I think Joey come down and got it. I can't remember. And they carried it back to their shop. And this is the story I was told, was they took the body off to make it a Magnum. And about a week later, the phone rings. And it's Buddy Arrington, and he says, "Is Joe there?" And I says, "No." And he says, "Well, maybe you can answer." He says, "What's all these little lines between the floorboards in the car?" And there were little lines that went to the torsion bars. They could drop the car down, you know.
Yeah.
You couldn't get it back up, but you could drop it down. And he got caught.
Oh, of course.
You know, they went out there, and they ran, you know, you get to the track, you go down pit road, you hit the track, and the car would bounce a little bit, mm-hmm. and it would drop down. Well, then there was a great big crash in the first lap, and he come down, lined up down pit road, and there's all these Dodges like this, and he's way down like this.
Oh,
they caught him.
Yeah.
You know, but he wanted to know what them lines was.
Nice try.
Between the floorboards.
Yeah.
So one of our viewers, Stephen Knipe, has a question. He says, does Blackie still have the tandem Holman Moody Hauler in Minneapolis?
Yes, he does. It's out at his son's farm right now, and it's all there. And he bought another cab for it because it's pretty rusty, and he hopes to have it running in the spring. You know, it's huge. You know, but no, they still have it. The ramps and everything is there, just the way it was. They repainted it blue and white rather than red and white, but it's sitting there.
Nice. Do we want to say hello to everybody that's listening real
quick? Yeah, I also want to mention that Ron Hutcherson had passed away last week. You said Steve Knipe, and he mentioned that last week on the show, and I meant to say something, but I didn't. And I had actually messaged Ron 2 weeks before, trying to have him call in, but I messaged his daughter, but I didn't realize he was in such bad shape at that point. But she got back to me the next day, but she didn't say anything about him being in bad shape.
Maybe she didn't realize it, or maybe she didn't want to concern anybody.
Yeah, because he used to live up here in Mooresville, mm-hmm. and he worked right across the street from me. He actually bought this a big facility to have like a place to play for kids to come and play baseball and that type of stuff indoors. And it was right across the street from Roush Yates Engines where I was working. So I got to know him a little bit there.
I got a quick one on Ron Hutchison. Oh, they were from Iowa. And I had a speed shop in 2019. We were chassis shop and everything. And one of our sponsors or one of our customers was going to do the Daytona Dash thing. And he come in and he says, can you get stuff from down south? And I went, well, what do you want? He says, well, I need dump cans and catch cans and this's and that's and all this stuff. And I says, I'll get back to you. So I called down to Hutch's, and Ron got on. I asked for Ron. He got on the phone, and I said, hey, this is Skip Pollock up in Minnesota. I says, I own Valley Speed Shop. I says, and I got a customer who's looking for some parts. And he says, who's this? And I says, Skip Pollock.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. He come back, and he says, just a minute. He come back, and he said, what do you need? And I told him, and I, what's his son's name? I can't remember. Robbie?
Rich? It was.
I don't remember.
It was Ron. Was it? Wait a minute.
I got it written down at home.
Yeah. Well, it was Rick.
I don't remember. But he come back on the phone, and he told you, he says, whatever this guy wants, set up an account. He says, he's good as gold.
Mm-hmm.
And we started buying parts from for these guys up in the Daytona Dash stuff up there. And his name was Christian Elder.
Oh, okay.
And they from Minneapolis and bought parts for like 2 summers from Hutchison and never had a problem. They were wonderful people.
Yeah. That was Ron Hutcherson drove to back in the day in 1978. Butch Mock and Bobber Healy went down and bought a car from him. I believe it was $17,000, the first one that Ray Mock had he drove at Daytona. Butch Mock drove at Daytona and backed it into the wall. But that was the one they paid $17,000 for it Ron Hutcherson's car. There's a picture of it. I found a picture of that exact car with Bob and Butch Mock's sitting right in front of it, and it's the same one that Ron had there at Daytona, I guess probably the year before or so. So anyway, that was that.
Your turn.
No, you go on. I'm listening. I'm taking it all in.
Well,
Skip,
didn't
Ron run a real part of the country, dirt driver?
Yes. They were out of Keokuk down there, and they ran all the big half-mile dirt tracks up there.
You remember he come down with Holman and Moody?
Yes. Kind of a pinkish, whatever the hell they like to call it. Cranberry.
He's supposed to be a dirt track ace, you know. I believe it was ace for Weaverville. He spun Jim Pascal out. And I believe Pascal was driving one of those Tom Freak and Bill Ellis cars. So about the next race he went to, they go down, I believe, Greenville. And Pascal got on his bumper. Now, Pascal never said nothing to him about getting spun out of the previous weekend. So Pascal got on his bumper and never let up. And he turned this way, then he turned this way. And Ron was trying to correct it, you know, keep getting spun out. Then when he got to the turn down there, got to the corner, Pascal let up and turned him loose, and he drove it straight in the wall. After that, Ron never said a word to Pascal, but he never messed with him again.
Hmm.
That's That's respect.
You bet.
Yeah.
You had to respect Jim Pascal, one of the best ever.
The people back then, when I was young and in the 60s and stuff, the only thing we had up in Minnesota was Stock Car Magazine. And it was to us kids, as young kids, I mean, this was, we knew every page, every ad, every, what everybody did, you know, and it was, you know, Petty Pierce and Allison, I mean, all them guys back then, and Soapy Castles, which I thought he was the neatest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, that time of my life in the mid-70s was fabulous. You meet all these people, you know, and Joe told me, he says, keep your mouth shut and your eyes and your ears open. You're going to learn a lot. And he was right, and it stuck with me all these years. And to see these folks, you know, down in Florida when we go down there, and just to meet and greet and talk to them, and they just light up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like their mind opens back up again. They remember all this stuff. It's just, Dana and I, we just so look forward to this every year. And now with the moonshine deal and Bill and their hospitality is unbelievable.
Can you imagine the stories that'll be told Friday evening and dinner?
Yeah. It's Saturday too.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, Saturday there'll probably be so many, you know, fans and people coming by. They're going to be getting autographs and all this stuff. It's going to be
your buddy Will Cronkite will be there and
yes.
And happen to run across Ronnie and Will in Mooresville at the North Carolina Racing Hall of Fame. All three have showed up at the same time, just about. And what was so unique about that, Ronnie? You remember? What was so unique about our meeting together?
We walked out without paying.
Well, that's one thing.
What was unique, if I'm right in saying this now, first motor I had ever had built, a lot of people, the older bunch on here remember, this guy that raced out of Christiansburg by the name of Clyde Lynn back in the 60s, and I guess Clyde quit maybe in the early 70s, but I went out to his junkyard. I say I did. My dad and me, we got a 70 or 71 Ford Pinto and made a baby grand out of it and ran it in 75. So I got it from Clyde. We took it down to our service station. We had on the Gulf service station. They had two bays. We stripped it apart. Of course, had some people helping us, guys coming out. Back then, that's when people would really come around, like to help and be involved in it. So stripped it down. Took the motor, Bill fixed the motor for us, and I, first motor I had built, my first car was Will Cronkite, if the memory serves him right. It would have been the first car that he worked on when he moved here from, I can't remember where he moved, he was from up north, wasn't he?
Up in Pennsylvania, well, I believe.
So, yeah, but, Pennsylvania. But we went down there and got the Bill on it. It was like, he put, we got, Dick Hutcherson and Eddie Pagan put the roll cage in it, and Will went down there and bent a dash for it and put the seat bracket in it and a little tabs to you put your seat belt and did a little fuel cell bracket and made a couple of things for it, and we come back and finished it, but he did the motor and Will kind of did some of the car stuff, and we come back and, you know, paint it and put the gauges in it and wired it and put the motor in it and made the exhaust knob. But Will will tell you that's probably the first car when he moved down here that he actually worked on. Then when we built our little Vega, we took it down there and he made some spoilers for it. Now, Will was one of these early fabricators back in the day, and he was just
craftsman, really.
He was a craftsman. Mm-hmm. He was a very intelligent fella.
First time we'd seen one other in years. All three at the same time.
Yeah, and that's been years ago, too. Well, 10 years?
Yeah, I still love listening to him and his stories and his intelligence. Is amazing. Yeah, he's probably tuned in, or if he's not right now, he will be.
He's probably, 80, 81, I guess? Will's about 80 years old, I guess.
Yeah, he just had a birthday the other day, right, Bryson? Same day as Bryson.
Yeah,
what year, how old was he? 80, 81, I believe.
It was 81. 81, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's about right. So did you take that car and go race at North Wilkesboro?
First race I ever ran was 1975 at North Wilkesboro.
All right.
I can't remember.
Oh.
I will tell you one thing, Sonny. First time ever. You know, they hadn't had the window nets out when Petty had that bad wreck at Darlington. I think that's when they first came out with the window nets after that.
That's the Petty net.
And I went out Wilkesboro. I got a picture of it. And I remember when I went out and they black flagged me, and I'm like, what'd I do wrong? I came in and I forgot to put the went in that up. So my first lap on the track, I got black flag and I pulled in.
Oh, man, yes.
Of course, got to go back out and put the dead up, but yeah. I used to remember little things like that.
Sure. I'm sure. Whenever you said that, I was thinking about my daughter. I took her go-kart racing. I was trying to get her out to do some go-kart racing at Millbridge and put her out there on the track. She didn't have the neck brace thing on. So they told her to come back in and get that put on. And then she just kind of started crying, and that was the end of that.
Well, I didn't cry. I kept going. But,
yes.
Yeah, maybe if I knew how the race was going to go a lot more years of my life later on, I might have cried about it, but I didn't know what was coming.
All the money spent, maybe, or
well,
something like that.
We was which it hurt us in the long run. We was a little bit too conservative on our money, and, you know, if Skip was talking...
You got a bag of popcorn, didn't you?
That's about it.
Yeah, well...
But, you know, Skip was talking about Joe Frisson.
Yeah.
I mean, people know it. I mean, Joe spent a lot of his dad's money.
Yeah, sure, concrete.
You know, the difference between Joe's dad and mine... Mine wasn't going to let me spend a lot of his money.
Yeah.
You know, it was at the...
He was trying to race, too, wasn't he?
Well, he had quit racing, but we had a one bay at the service station, and like all of them, you know, we serviced one side, changed oil on, put tires on, and the other side, a lot of days we'd push the car out, and that's back when you'd vacuum a car and wash it for a couple bucks and used to put what they call rude glide on the tires. A lot of people, well, you remember rude glide.
Sure
we rude glide the tires on and then you'd push the car back. Some days we wouldn't have to, but we actually won Rookie of the Year out of a one bay. And I tell people that, of course, you couldn't do anything like that now, but we won it out of a one bay service station.
Well, just think, Ronnie, if I hadn't got that motor running for you down at Rockingham, you would never won that.
That's right.
We was down at Rockingham. I'll just tell you this real quick. We was at Rockingham, and we couldn't get the motor running. And a guy in Roanoke, Virginia, had built the motor for us, rebuilt it. And we couldn't get it running. And Bill, tell you this. What was the 180 degree we had?
You had the cam off 180 degree.
180. Couldn't get it running. And this was when I was running for Rookie of the Year. So, yeah, I'm thinking maybe what this guy did contributed to us winning Rookie of the Year. I mean, things go by so fast, you forget things, but you couldn't, no way you could win Rookie of the Year.
Grinding on that thing trying to get to crank. I listened to him and I said, hey, boys.
Of course, you're talking about 78, so a lot of years ago.
By the way,
there you go.
You've never paid for that.
I ain't paid for that either.
Oh, gosh. So your first Winston Cup start was in 77. Was it Pocono?
First one's Pocono, and a lot of people don't realize you couldn't do it nowadays. Mm-hmm. But I'd only ran maybe 15 or 20 of those baby grand races from 75 till 77. You know, I went to Pocono, and I will tell you this. I told my dad, I said, I'm not running like you independents. And he said, what? I said, I'm not running in the back. He said, well, you'll run like we run, or you won't be racing long. Mm. So the race started, and, of course, I qualified about 30th or 35th and run about 20, 30 laps. And Jay, I remember like Thursday, J.D. McDuffie and Jimmy Means are a couple of the independents in front of me, and I passed them going down in the – you know, you got that – what do you call Long Pond? Is it Long Pond?
Long
Pond, a big long straightaway.
Yeah.
And I passed them going in one. And next thing I know, I backed in. They call it bowler plate they had back then. You may have had bowler plate at Poke. And I shortened the back end up about 3 foot. Of course, we had to take it to Hutch's to get a rear clip put on it.
Yeah.
And we was going down the road. My dad said, you know how many times we can stand this? And he said, you run like we run, or we stay at home. And that's when I realized you just got to – you know, you just can't – if you don't have the funding, you just can't do it. And you could, I can't even imagine what it would be like now. But – can tell you a quick story on you want to need to take a break, or can I tell you a story on Kyle?
Actually, we can wait. I mean, go ahead. Tell the story. We'll do the break after.
I want to tell you something concerning my dad. In 1980, I'm trying to remember when Kyle Petty first came into Cup racing. Was it 80 or 81?
79, around a handful of races, I believe it was. And then 81, I think, was full-time.
Yeah, we was at Bristol, and we was sitting either – on the wall, they wasn't practicing. It was a break, and my dad and me sitting on the wall, and that's when you couldn't bring tractor trailer in. You had to unload everything and get like the smaller trucks, and you leave everything. You just couldn't bring a tractor trailer in. You didn't have a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sitting there, and Kyle come in, and he had, of course, you know, I was a young fella, and he was too, a little younger than me. And he had four or five sets of tires, brand new. And I remember five or six guys with these STP uniforms walking around helping, and a real pretty car. And I told my dad, I said, man, that's how we need to race. That's when I said, we need to go get us a brand new car. Mm-hmm. We need to go get us a top-notch motor, and we need three or four sets of tires. And he said, if I was Richard Petty, you would have the car, you'd have the tires, but you got to realize I can't afford to do it, and Richard's got sponsors as a reason he's able to do it. So he just said, you know, that's when I just realized with, you know, you sit around and you can't – oh, and the words he said was, sitting on a wall, and it was on Saturday, and he said, you see up in the stands there, all these kids sitting around, which that's back when they used to really pack the stands. And I said, yeah. And he said, you know how many of these kids would like to be able to just sure. get in this car yeah. if they had to run 25th, would like to do it? And I said, well, and he said, a lot of people would like to be in it. So everybody cannot be a winner in everything. And it's got to be people in the front, people in the middle, and people in the back. And I know that I think it was Rusty Wallace, one of them said, you know, second place is the first loser.
Yeah.
Well, that's well, pretty easy to say.
Somebody's got to lose too, right?
Yeah, somebody's got to lose. Yeah. It's easy to say that, but when you're in a situation like we was in,
yeah.
I didn't even go to the racetrack thinking about winning. We just first thing we went to do is to make the show and then try to get a decent finish. That's the way it was. And then most of the independents would tell you that.
What kind of advice did Bobby Allison have for you on that?
Actually, my dad set that up. I was really wanting to get tired of running the way we was running over the years. And Allison come down there and he said, I need to talk to you. Well, as soon as he talked to me a minute or two, I knew what the deal was. My dad had set him up to come down. He said, I need to talk to you about this stuff. He said, you're lucky to be able to be a part of it. And he said, if you ever get a sponsor, you can run like we run, but you can't afford to get your dad in the poorhouse over this deal. So that's just how it was.
That was kind of good advice, I guess.
And I was lucky, you know. I look back, I know all these people because of it. If it wasn't for, you know, I always said they talk about the kids with silver spoons now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always kind of said, I might have had like a little bit of a plastic spoon. You know, when I started out, I had a 10-year-old truck. I had a 5-year-old cup car. But, you know, and I thought back then, but, you know, I want a nice truck, a nice car. I didn't even really care about the truck. I just want a nice race car and good stuff. But you look back now, I'm thinking, man, I just lucky to be a part of it. You know, I hadn't been for my dad. I wasn't one rookie of the year. Say what they want to, they can't take us out of the record books. We're in there with an elite group. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Petty won it. And, you know, there's a lot of people that won rookie of the year. So I'm in that little group. So may not be in the front-running group, but I'm in the group.
Well, you look at 77 was Ricky Rudd and his car chief or crew chief was Will Cronkright.
That's right.
And then the year after you was Dale Earnhardt Sr., of course.
In 76, it's Skip Manning, wasn't it?
I think you're right.
And I built motor for Skip.
And Bonnie.
I hate to say this. Yeah, I built a terrible Bonnie, too.
See how each year kind of...
But Skip couldn't drive an L in a snow bike. I tell you.
Wait a minute. Who couldn't? Skip.
Skip.
Oh, Skip. The other Skip. The not other this Skip. Skip. I saw Skip looking at you like,
no,
hey,
what
about me?
Skip.
Yeah,
he would practice and pace imaginary cars. He'd be all over the racetrack. He'd come in. What's the matter? Well, I was pacing imaginary cars. Really?
Is that a Talladega by chance?
That's Martinsville.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you're hearing imaginary things and whatever. Anyway,
that's a good excuse, isn't it? I never thought of that one.
You remember that story, Bobby Isaac? Of course, he might have really heard stuff, but it was a whenever he got out of the car. Yeah.
That was Old Hickory, wasn't it?
Talladega or Daytona.
Last race at Hickory. Didn't he get out of a car with Hickory too?
I heard it was at Talladega. Because of the old Indian burial grounds and such down there. So
now that's a fact. I used to hunt down there. I used to live down there.
Really?
I went hunting over there, yeah.
Oh, that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the Talladega race, I remember reading that Isaac heard son telling him to get out of the car.
Heard
so
voices,
he pulled
yeah.
down pit road.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hickory was when he had the, you know, the heart attack, if I'm correct.
I knew something about Hickory was had happened with him. Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about that?
And he's buried, I believe, right over there on the hill at Hickory, isn't he, at the Speedway?
Yes.
I believe he is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure he is.
Well, his son's still around, I believe, right?
He is.
Yeah. Bobby Jr., I guess. All right, hey, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to Racing Roots with Ham. And we got Ronnie Thomas and Skip Pollock and Mr. Bill with us this evening. So, y'all, hang on. We'll be right back. All right, so back to Skip Pollock and Ronnie Thomas. So, Ronnie Thomas, if you're just tuning in, was the 1978 Rookie of the Year, and Skip Pollock was a local short track driver up in Minnesota, and you were also crew chief for Joe Frazzoni back in the 70s. So you've been around a long time, done a lot of stuff in NASCAR. I like your hat, the Winston Cup Series hat. That's a very cool hat.
I love it.
It's been put away in a plastic bag for, I had two of them. We lost one.
Yeah, we lost one.
Yeah.
And they're in a plastic bag, and I've had this stuff for so mm-hmm. long, and then Ronnie found out I got all this stuff at
Bye,
home.
Bye, y'all.
So.
Be
I've
safe.
Been bugging you for it, hadn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for his right? little mini museum and everything, and I think it's fabulous. I do.
I bet you Mr. Colbert Seagraves would like to see that, or like to have. He's probably got several.
Yeah,
you
know, imagine.
Running that museum up there, and his dad works for Winston or Gene Reynolds.
Yeah.
So, all right, so we're going to talk about some of your stuff. When's the last time you talked to Mr. Dale Earnhardt Sr.?
Oh, I'm going to tell you three good ones.
Yes.
All true stories.
All right.
You want the Jack Ingram or the Dale and
Oh, no.
Senior
go ahead and
junior?
Tell your – go ahead and tell the Ingram one because we were talking about Hickory. And
okay. You know, well, I just want to tell you one. In 19 – in, I don't know, 83, 84, I seen the handwriting on the wall. Money was getting even tighter, so we kind of backed off and – You know, and I went to some races, and actually Buddy Arrington drove my car at Wilkesboro, and Joe Boer drove it a race or two, and I just didn't care for that, doing a deal with other people. So to make a long story short, I just kind of started phasing out of it and ended up finally in, I guess, about 87, I sold everything, and I started running these late model stock cars, which is popular then and real popular now, so... We got to run these things. We was going to Motor Mile, and, of course, it's Pulaski County and New River Valley. A lot of people remember it by. And Kingsport, Coburn, Martinsville, and Wilkesboro, and going to Myrtle Beach a couple times for the big race they had. So we got to run these things, and it took me about three or four races. You know, they were half the horsepower of the Cup cars, and they were 200 or 300 pounds lighter. So it's taken me a little bit to figure them out in about the fourth, fifth race, I figured them out, and, you know, we won a race here and won a race there, and the first thing you know, we was winning a lot of places, and, you know, we went to Martinsville and set a track record and won a race, and I guess when I ended up quitting, I'd sit on four or five poles there and went to Wilkesboro and won, and I got to ride the elevator, things, you know, mm-hmm. we didn't get to do in Cup.
Got a clock.
Then even though we went down, I had more fun in it because we were winning races.
Yeah.
And I would go around tracks, and people would say, would you take my car out and practice it? And I kind of think, yeah, it's pretty neat. People know, take my car and see what you think about it. And I go out, and what do we need to do? And, you know, the driver wouldn't be there late, and they said, take our car out and shake it down for us. I do that. So in 96, somewhere along in there, Jack Ingram shows up at New River Valley Speedway up in some Radford, Virginia, and Kerry Botenheimer told me this fella's name, and it was a trim guy that helped Jack Ingram for years and years. We was up there practicing. He had his skull car up there, and this guy comes up to me. This was on a Friday, and they had an open practice, and we'd go up a couple times a year and play around with some stuff. And so I was up there running and had a break. Come up, he said, Jack wants to know if you'll take his car out and tested for him. Now, Jack had been running in it that day. So I said, well, sure. So I go down there and get in it, and Jack says this, says that, and he says it was a front steer truck arm car. And he was telling me about this, and he was telling me about that. So I go out, and he had Goodyear tires. We was running Hoosiers, and he had Goodyear tires on it. and he was telling me a little bit of difference in the tire. So go out and run about, he said, run it hard. So I went out and buzzed it pretty hard for about 10 laps. I come in, and his crew chief sticks his head in there, and he said, well, what's it feel like? What's it doing for you? And he said, I said, well, God, this thing gets down in the corner good, gets off good. I said, to me, I said, it's my thinking. It's too tight in the center of the corner, a little too tight. And he said, that's all I need to know. And I swore, and he said, that's exactly what Jack said.
Oh, how about
and
that?
I thought, I walked off and I said, yeah, I kind of felt, as silly as this might sound, I felt like I kind of made it in racing when Jack Ingram asked you to take his car out. Yes,
that's a great story.
So that was the Jack Ingram story. And I'll tell you the story on the Earnhardts. In 82, 83, we'd either left Darlington or Rockingham. And the next week after, Earnhardt comes over to me and says, well, I tell you one thing, you kind of rough on me when I come up to pass you. And I'm like, rough on you? What do you mean? He said, I come up to lap you. And I said, yeah. And he said, time I go in the corner, you're crowding me up. And I said, crowding you up? He said, yeah, and you taking up a little too much racetrack. And I said, well, darn, you give you an inch, you take a mile. And he said, no, you was crowding me. And all I said was, I said, well, I tell you what, it's true, two grooves wide. I run halfway on the apron and halfway on the track, and that'll give you a lane and a half. And, boy, he looked at me, and you know what? It's honest God's truth, that guy never spoke to me again after that. Because he probably thought, well, as slow as you're running, you ought to run a whole car on apron, which might have been the truth. Oh. But Dale's just – he was just a rough, tough customer. And, you know, he was just – he didn't
– he was intimidating.
He was intimidating, yeah. So that happened, and in 1995 or 96, Dale Jr. was at Martinsville. And like I said, we were going to Martinsville in a late mile, and, you know, we was qualifying up front, and, you know, we fell out of one race. We was leading. We fell out of another one. We got in a crash, and, you know, we just – if we didn't finish we always – you know, we crashed and had problems, but most time we was just always in the top three or four, and, you know, it'd be 90 and 100 cars show up that thing. So we got down there, and on Friday, I guess it was, they had a open practice, and he came over to him and he said, my crew chief, and I don't have no idea who it was, said, would you help me a little bit? And I said, what do you need? And he said, will you go out and let me follow it? No, he said, you follow me for a few laps, then I'll motion you by me. And he said, we'll reverse it. You know, I'm going to follow him, and he's going to back off and motion me by and reverse it. So we run about 7 or 8 laps, and then the other one followed the other one. And come in, and he asked me what I was doing, you know, said, what am I doing wrong? And I said, well, you know, you need to drive off into the corner a little bit harder and let it kind of roll a bit more. And I just tell him how to drive it through this and get it, pull it down a little bit further towards your curbing. And I tell people that now, and they're like, I'm sure Dale Earnhardt Jr. asked you to help him. I said, the guy hadn't been – I said, everybody starts sometime.
Right.
But, you know, if I'd have been a 25th place driver or 30th place driver, he probably would have never asked me. It's just because we were running front. And I just always thought after I got out of Cup and I went to running late models, and, you know, we was setting track records at different places. And, you know, when we run Cup, everybody liked me. The fan, you didn't have nobody booing you. But then I got to running the late models, and the first thing you know – I was winning, and people like you a little bit. And then three or four more wins, you hear less cheering. And the first thing you know, you win a championship or two, and then you win in races, and you're doing this and that. And the first thing you know, you're getting booed. And I'm like, what's going on? And then you're not just getting booed, you're getting the finger. And I'm sitting down there, and I'm like, told the track guy, the guy that was over the track, then I said, the PR guy, and I said, what's going on here? And he said, you're seeing the other side of it. When you go to winning too much, people are like, and, you know, NASCAR, next thing I know, I got sheets on where NASCAR, you know, we run every car, Chevrolet for a couple years, Fords for a couple years, Chrysler's for a couple years, and we won in everything, and NASCAR made this big rule in 95 or 96 that I was the only Chrysler in the country. I mean, and Ford. They never took, they slowed us down. They made us put a little smaller car. But first thing they did, they put 80, they put 50 pounds on the first week. And then the next week, they put 30 pounds more to the left side. And then the next thing we come back and they said, we're going to restrict your carburetor a little bit more. And we was winning, but what happened is it took the advantage away and it really pulled us back to them. And instead of winning a lot, we were still winning, but we weren't winning near as much as we was. And I'm like, I talked to NASCAR about it, and I think Jerry Cook may have been over the series then. And I called down and I said, how is this right that all these other guys are running Chryslers and Fords, but you're not going to slow them down? And they said, it's a clause in the rule book, and it was the track. Each track has a right to do what they deemed possible to make it competitive across the board. So, you know, it's just one of them things. They was just backing us up to them. But if you remember back, I guess, I don't know, it was in the Cup days, they would take a little spoiler off the back of a Chevrolet's, or they would, you know, take a little bit off the Ford or cause, you know, unfair advantage to say. So it's the same way in the late model.
Okay. Or that change the angle of the spoiler.
Right. Back then, for one, you know, to try to help one one manufacturer or hurt another one. That's
So does that mean if the race is like a Dodge dealer's 500, then they might give the advantage a little bit to the Dodge's good?
Well, that's what they say, but. Yeah. I don't know. I know that some of the race I run, I won a race that was a big Dodge race, and it was like 3,000 win, which was a lot of money for a 100-lap late model race back in the early 90s. And I won the thing, and people said, well, it's because of Dodge dealers. We didn't do anything different. We've been doing. We just happened to win, and it was Dodge dealers. But, you know, if you and we won Ford races. Ford, you know, you used to have all the dealers around. You had Ford, Chrysler, and Chevrolet, and they would all sponsor different races and all. That's back when, I don't know, I thought things was really good back in the day racing then.
Sure.
Compared to now.
If you had an engine, a blow-up or something, you can go and borrow one from someone else, maybe.
Days are long gone.
They are, ain't they? But you did borrow one from, was it DK Ulrich, maybe? Who'd you borrow an engine from?
You're on your history.
Yeah.
Do you want me to tell you the story?
Yeah, tell us the story of that.
In 80, I'm trying to say when it was, 82, somewhere along in there, maybe 83, most time we had one engine. We did have two that time. We went to Darlington, and it was the September race, which would be in the, Southern 500.
Yep. Yes.
So we went there. Guess what? We blowed our engine. We take the engine out. At that time, my crew didn't come down, just one guy helping me. So we pulled the engine out, and we got to put the other engine in. And Skip, remember how it was? You had the big old oil coolers back then, Harrison oil coolers, whatever it was. We had to flush it and back flush it, and you're at the track trying to shake
junk
it, get the junk out of it, and blow your lines up. So we... You know, it takes you an extra hour or two to do that. And, God, it's hot there in September. It was probably 90 degrees. Humidity was hot. So we changed it, got the other engine in. Guess what?
What?
Blew that engine.
Oh.
We didn't have an engine.
Sure.
So we didn't know what to do. And DK Ulrich had two cars. And the one car, I guess DK was driving it, was in the show. His other car was not in the show, and they stood on their time. And Skip, remember this, you would qualify like maybe Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Well, see, a lot of times on Friday, you might have, say, myself and Elmo Langley's car and Jimmy Means' car and Buddy Aaron's car. Well, see, if you didn't get in the top 20, a lot of times people would do what they call stand on their time. So you could lock that time, keep your time that's locked in. And, you know, that time is going to stand for Saturday's qualifying. And what you're planning on is the track slowing up on Saturday, so that Friday time would kind of guarantee you get in. You didn't have the chance going out re-qualifying again. Well, I don't even know if we got to make any qualifying laps the first day. So DK, I think his car number 40, I believe it was in the show. His other car, I guess he had rented it out. He stood on the time. We got a I think his engine builder and crew chief then might have been Sandy Jones. I'm not positive about that. And I said, we didn't have an engine. I told Marsha, I said, we just going to load up. Ain't got a motor. And I said, well, I'm going to go. DK pulled that motor out, and I went and talked. I think it was Sandy. Can I use that motor, DK? And he said, it won't get in the show. We had to take it out and put our other motor in where we make a show. And I said, well, can I try it? And he said, Ronnie, you can't make the show with it. So I walk off, and Sandy, I think it was Sandy, told me, said, that engine, you put that engine in, you'll get in the show. So I went and talked to DK. I said, how much you charge me to rent that motor to get in the show? And whoever it was in it had done the motor. He said, well, let him try it. And DK said, we'll put it in. We go and stick it in. Now, a couple of my crew guys, two or three of my crew guys had showed up at that time. We got our engine out, same thing, cleaned everything out, got the motor in, and we were on what they call the five-minute clock then. And I was actually in the car, and I'd taken a shop rag, and I didn't even wash my hands. I just took the shop rag. I was sitting in the seat, and they said, tighten the shifter up real quick. So I was tightening the shifter up, got it on, wiped my hands, shop, and throwed it in. They said it was Ernie. I can't remember the guy that was official then, but it was Oscar Bowman.
Yeah.
And I think Ernie, I can't remember the guy, so they said, hurry up, get across the scales, and hurry up, we'll get you so you can get to qualify. So we backed it off, and I mean, honestly, we went across the scales so quick, it just almost stopped. Get out there, and I was going down pit road, and Marshall was with me. We was pushing it down there, and we got down there, and the guy at the paddle said, you got 4 minutes, and I started the car up to let it warm up, and sit there and run it maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and we had a little cover over the nose, and it was so hot that day, it didn't take long for it to warm up, so pulled it off, and he counted down 5 seconds. I took out. We made the show. So what? Guess what? We had DK's backup motor in. His car was on the hot seat. We got in the show, and it knocked DK's car out of the race.
Wow.
So DK was so I kind of lost a little respect into my guys. I like DK, but I don't know if he's listed or not, but and he may not remember this. I'm just telling it like it was. He come over and he said, get my engine out. And we had a lot of times we didn't have a regular fan. We took a fan that used to take out the furnaces at home, and it was just in a box. You remember the box fans from the furnace?
Yeah.
And we had it sitting on top of the radiator, cooling everything off the hood up. And I said, well, give us a few minutes, DK. I'm going to run and get them some hot dogs and drinks. Because, you know, so I go to the refreshment stand and get them all hot dogs, drinks, set it on top of the car. DK comes over there, and he said, I told you to get the motor out of the car right now. And he took those guys' drinks and their hot dogs, and he took his hands, and he went on top of the roof of the car, and he went like this. And everything went flying out in the garage area, not in the garage, in the behind the garage area.
Right.
And my guys look on, and he said, I said, get my so-and-so motor out of the car right now. So we just got the motor out of the car, took this truck, and the guy who was on DK's crew come and said, he just got mad because you knocked his car out of the show. I said, well, it was kind of bad, you think about it, that his car missed a show. But
still,
he said, well, I knew the motor would get in there. I mean, we qualified near the back. But if it hadn't been for that, I was thinking, just let us use that motor. But what I can't remember is what we put in. We must have tried. We must have fixed one of the motors that blowed up at the track. I don't, because we didn't go anywhere and get a motor. So we had to either take two motors and make a motor or fix one of the motors that blew up. I don't know, but that's a funny story on DK Orks, and that's a true story.
Yeah, that's good.
And
stuff.
That was common.
Yeah,
that was common to get parts from another guy instead of heads or this or that or. And just to make it run, just to try and get in the show. That was very, very common.
I guess you probably got a lot of parts from Junior Johnson at times.
I went down Junior's probably, I won't say 50 times, but I probably went down there a dozen times and go down Junior's. And I would go at night. I never could. I know now what deal was. I couldn't. He'd always have me come down later at night. And his crew guys, a lot of them were gone. And
Probably wanted that cash.
Well, that's what he wanted. I'd pull around the side there near the top, and you'd walk up the back of the. I don't know if you've been to his house or not, in his garage.
I've been by it, yeah.
But you go up the back steps, and he said, just come on up there. And I'd call him. I was, of course, you didn't have a cell phone then. I'd call him, and I was iron 40 minutes from him. He said, just when you pull down there, I'll see you, just come on up the back. And every now and then, you know, they'd have a sandwich. You want a sandwich, bologna sandwich, or whatever she was fixing. And sometimes I'd eat a sandwich with them. Most time I didn't, but I did a
Flossie.
And I'd go down there and I'd get parts off Junior. And I made, you know, I bought a lot of used stuff off him. But, you know, the thing about it is, Skip can tell you, back in the day, people were having trouble keeping motors together. I mean, there was a lot of top teams back in the 70s and 80s would detonate engines. Just the parts, you know, the quality of the, well, you know, you've been in the quality of the material quality wasn't there like it is nowadays. And I would buy so much used stuff off of him, and I actually was selling some of that stuff. He'd sell it to me cheap, and I'd sell it. And it would just keep us racing. Sometimes I'd make a little money off the parts that he was selling me, but it's just, hey, we weren't the only one doing it. You did whatever you did to have to. You know, I never was a drinker. I never was a smoker. But I said racing is like a drug in a way. I mean, it's just, it gets in your blood. Mm-hmm. You got to know when to hold them, when to fold them, and not, you know, not go. You can't let this stuff get you in trouble financially. Yeah. And it, like Skip was saying, it's a lot of people went broke over racing. I mean, went busted.
They lost everything.
Yeah.
Sure. And then you never heard from them again.
They were gone. Mm.
I guess y'all probably saw a lot more of that back in the 70s.
Yes, sir. A lot of independents, they'd show up. At the end, a lot of the guys, they went to the shows that had the ABC TV money. That was a whole bunch of more money because it was televised. And so you'd sit down, you get the entry form, and you go down and say, oh, there's TV money here.
Uh-huh.
Well, so-and-so crashed, so he's not going to be in this one. This one's not going to be in this one. And you chose what shows you were going to run. Because if you weren't running for points, you ran to get enough money to go to the next show.
Okay. I mean,
that's how it was. You figured out. And you'd bring tires home, and all the shops, they had little 2x4 tire racks there, and you'd mark on the tire, Daytona, which I think it was Daytona, Talladega.
You run the same compound.
The same compound. And you'd put them up there, and you'd write on them what they were and how many laps was on them. So when you got to the track, you had them tires to put on. So you didn't buy no tires.
Hmm.
You ran on them old tires just to get the car shook down because it was the right compound.
Wow. Yeah. And then sometimes you could actually do other things to make some money, but we might talk about that in a little bit. But first of all, Tracy wanted to ask a few questions here.
Yeah, there's a surprise guest on the line. I just want to make sure they get a little mention here.
Yeah.
There is a Jennifer that's watching right now. She actually messaged you about the oil sensor on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
You helped her fix her oil sensor.
Good deal. Yeah.
Anyway, she wanted to say that her dad is Johnny Barnes, and he raced in 71 to 74, and she has his dad's Winston Cup jacket stored in a bag.
Oh,
so
nice.
So that's kind of like 6 degrees of separation right here.
Yeah.
That her dad was racing, and you helped her, and she found the show because you helped her.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
That's
so
neat.
Thank you for watching, Jennifer. That's kind of cool.
Wonder if that jacket's from 71, because that would have been the first year of the Winston Cup.
No, she. I
Something
think
like
she
that.
Says Maybe. It was 77.
Oh, okay.
I think she says he raced in 77.
Yeah, still doing it in 30-something years, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Scott Trevison did have a question. I got to find it again. Please ask our legends if they ever knew famous newspaper reporter Gene Granger from Spartanburg,
Absolutely.
South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Tall, skinny guy.
Very well.
He said he helped him in his NASCAR trivia board game. And then another question came through. I've got to find it again. Stephen Presley says, ask both guests what was their favorite track and where was their favorite car. Or what was their favorite car? Who wants to go first? Favorite track and your favorite car.
Golly. Any track that we made the show at.
Anyone you won?
I mean, when we made the show, you know, we qualified and we were there at the end. I think it was Charlotte.
Charlotte? What about you?
I probably, you know, there was a lot. You always look forward to going to Daytona in February. You're getting out here and it's cold, and you go down there and it's warm, and you hadn't raced for a few months. I enjoyed going to Daytona, although, God, you're in such a pressure cooker. So many cars showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So number one thing, like, everywhere is getting into the show to start with, and then we go on. But around here, I kind of enjoyed going to North Wilkesboro and Martinsville, Richmond, all the short tracks. The problem, and I kind of like going to, a lot of people didn't like Pocono,
mm-hmm.
but I enjoyed going to Pocono, and we made so many friends up north. And sometimes, if you'd be a couple guys short, if you go to California, I love the road course out in California, that Riverside. You go to Riverside, you go to Pocono, Michigan, a lot of times there'd be guys say, I can't make it today, and you would actually make people, friends with people up there, would actually just jump in and help you on the crew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, I ain't never jacked a car. Today's a good day to start jacking.
There you go.
You know, and I mean, that's just...
hands-on experience.
We went to Talladega, and I had... my dad was there, and I always was pretty fortunate to have four or five guys that show up and help me from around town, guys I'd went to school with, a lot of them. We went to Talladega, and guess what? The guys could not make it. Here it was race morning. Is my dad... and a guy by the name of Jerry Stones, he's on the hood now, Stones Cafe, he'd give me a little money to help you along, like a lot of the guys had to just, you know, it took a lot of people to make it. So Jerry had never changed tires. His brother-in-law was there. He'd never done it. Guess what? I come in for a pit stop, and one of them took the tire. I don't know how it was. It's three people pit the car. Had one guy put the gas in. My dad was helping one of them change a tire and this and that. And one was jacking. And so they took one tire off, and the guy took a tire, and I don't know how it was, rolled it to the back, and he took the tire off the front and put it on the back. And they put the right front wheel on backwards.
Uh-oh. Hmm.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. They'd never done it before.
Right.
It was the first time. And Jerry Stone told me afterwards, he said,
did it work?
Well, it's a little nerve-wracking when you... no, they had to. It wasn't going. They had to turn it around. But Jerry said, it's a little nerve-wracking if you've never done this. And we had this guy from Christiansburg, and he went to Daytona with us, and it was in... it had been about 81. We made a race at... maybe 82. We made a race at Daytona for the 500, and he wanted to hold the pit board. Okay, you can hold the pit board. This one, you'd stand out in pit road. You didn't have those poles. No speed limit. He was on the police department in Christiansburg.
Mm.
And I come down, they told me, I said, he'll stop. First time he come down, you know, I don't care if you're running, you're leading or you're running 30th. You're probably going to come down pit road, 140 mile an hour back then?
Mm.
So I'm coming down there pretty good. And he's standing out in pit road. First thing you know, I'm getting close to him. I see him getting about a couple foot closer to the pit wall. And I get close, and I see him getting closer to the pit wall. And get almost to him. He's on the other side of the pit wall. And I told Marshall, I said, tell Frank he needs to hold the pit board out there and quit going over the wall. And I ain't going to tell you, but Marshall said he'd come back and said, you want somebody to stand out in front, you hold that so-and-so pit board. And he said, that thing looked like a Brahma bull coming down.
That's right.
Pit
that's
road.
Fast.
So I guess you never – that's why – it's just like we was talking – about driving a race car. Everybody thinks driving a race car is easy. Everybody thinks jacking a race car easy is on pit. Everybody thinks changing tires is easy. Everybody thinks, well, I get in the engine shop. I do it long enough. I built some engines. It's a different world when you get in a race and you're building a racing engine. You're jacking a car. You're putting tires on. You're
under
gassing.
Pressure.
It's a whole, it's
under
just a
pressure.
Whole different. I don't think fans realize what it's all about. So I'll tell you, in 84, 85, I seen the handwriting on the wall, and I knew I was getting out. So I went to Bristol, and I think it was Eddie Gossage and Ed Clark. Do y'all remember those guys?
Eddie Gossage with Texas, isn't he, or something like that?
Yeah, and Ed Clark, I don't know, is he retired? Do you know Ed Clark?
Not sure.
So anyway, they were up at Bristol. And I let my guys, I knew we was going to go to Bristol and race. And I told the guys, I said, well, we ain't going to run many more. I said, I want y'all to do something. It was about a dozen guys that helped me. I said, y'all come up and help. I'm going to let everybody drive the car today.
Yeah.
Took every crew member, and I practiced it.
Wow.
And we changed springs and all, and we changed this, gears. So when I got done doing my thing, I said, all right, everybody's going to get to drive today. So I put them in there, and every guy drove, and some of them run 50 mile an hour, and some of them run 60 mile an hour. To the person, they come in, they said, it's a whole lot different watching than it is behind that seat. Right.
And that's brilliant.
You gain a different respect. And it's like I told my dad, I said, I'm not running like you independents. Well, I found out when you get in behind that wheel, you know, and, you know, who knows? If I'd ever got a good ride, maybe I could, you know, a lot of people said, well, if you got a good ride, maybe you could have ran up front. Maybe I could, maybe I couldn't. But I will tell you one thing. It's a whole different world sitting behind that steering wheel than it is sitting in the stands watching.
Well, try building an engine and end jack in the car, the same engine you built.
Right. Yeah, you know where it comes from.
Hey, Bryson's got something to say over here.
Yeah, we just want to let everybody know and say hey to Kenny Thompson, who's tuned in and watching the show with
us. Oh, hey, Dad.
Yes.
My dad.
Fabricator.
Kenny Thompson. Fabricator. Top fabricator 2 years in a row.
Wow.
But
did
I wanted
y'all
to
ever
say,
get to work with Kenny, or do you ever buy hit or get hitters from him or anything?
I know him. Sorry. I just never got anything from him.
You see him right here, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You got it.
Yeah.
He's well
I'm
known.
I'm his twin. I am his twin. But I did want to say that when you were talking about the people pitching in and helping, it was all a family back then. You know, everybody wanted to help. Everybody wanted to see you win.
Yeah, he was a little guy. Everybody, you know, it was a
team.
Kind of a family affair in a way.
Exactly.
And I don't know how it is now in the garage area. I'm not around it, but
same.
It's still the same thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know either.
No,
I don't know.
They each got their own thing to do, and when they're done doing their thing,
That's it.
Go stand over there.
Yeah.
You know, whereas when we was down south, even up in Minnesota, we had guys that show up at the shop at night to do this and do that, and we'd wash the truck, we'd wash the trailer, you'd clean the floor out of the trailer, you'd clean the rubber out of the wheels, and we had boys in Spartanburg that would show up with a case of beer, and they didn't care what they did.
Right.
They wanted to be a part of it.
They wanted to be a part of it. I mean, they would be washing parts and when you went to when you went to Daytona, you come back and you had to repaint everything under the front of the car. It was all sandblasted off.
Right. Yeah, Magnaflux, everything.
Hey.
Oh, that was another one.
Hey, yeah. I don't know if Tim Brewer watches the show. Do y'all ever talk to Tim Brewer?
I haven't talked to him, but I do know that he's come up on the show before. He's been brought up and by some of my guests, so maybe they forwarded it to him.
I'll tell you a funny one on Tim Brewer. We was at when Junior Johnson and Neil Bonnet, number 11, number 12, Budweiser.
Yeah.
I guess, what, 80?
In the 80s,
83,
early 80s.
Some 84.
Mm-hmm.
We was at Darnington and used to leave the garage. You know, I can't remember at Darnington if it was like 12 to 1 or 12:30 to 1. They kind of shut down and people go to their trailers. And, you know, used to be a restaurant down off the – well, back then they changed to what is – fourth turn is now the
– North Turn. Racing's North Turn. You talking about – where are you talking about?
Where they got that restaurant.
On
they changed the ends of the racetrack. You know, the fourth turn is now second turn now or something.
My bad.
Oh, at Darlington, yeah. Turn one used to be hang on. What am I saying?
Something
the front
like
stretch
that.
Used to be the back stretch.
Turn one is
three. And they did that at Atlanta, too.
Yeah, there you go.
So they had a restaurant down in – at that time it was the fourth turn.
Yeah.
So some people went down there to eat. Some of the guys had their haulers in and would eat. And I told – I had one boy with me down there. The guys hadn't come down. This was on Friday, and I only had one helper down there. Then all the guys came down on Saturday. And I said, everybody's gone. I said, I'm going to crawl in under Junior's car. I mean, I can't believe I was crazy enough to do it. I was in under the car, and I told the boy with me, I said, nobody was around. I said, I'm just going to slide in under there real quick.
Take a peek.
And yeah, I said, I'm just going to see what shocks. That's when you run Monroe shocks.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading the numbers on them, and I was looking if he had, you know, wedge blocks and just looking at this and that on the, you know, what he did in under the car, what they did. Maybe, you know, if it had solid on this mount, and this mount was rubber on the motor mounts. I just looked, and I said, I'm going to take about 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm just going to visually look all in under this car. You watch for me, and if you see them coming – I'll crawl out and go walk down the garage. And I was sitting there looking in under it. And all of a sudden, they had Budweiser on their pants.
Oh.
And I was standing there and I said, oh, crap. I seen these Budweiser pants there. Well, I just see part of the Budweiser, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like this hot flush go all over me.
The blood left your face.
Oh, yeah. And I said, oh, crap. I said, maybe if I lay here a minute, he'll walk off. And I'm laying there. I'm, like, not moving. And his head looks down. He said,
uh-oh.
It's Tim Brewer.
Uh-oh.
And he said, don't let the car fall on you, Ronnie. I said, well, I just want to see one thing I was going to ask y'all. He said, yeah, sure. And I rolled out, and I kind of ducked my head down. So we was at a get—that was in, like, in the early, mid-'80s.
Mm-hmm.
We was at a get-together at Alex Bean's, which Alex has passed away down at the museum down there below, not the North Carolina Motorsports Hall, but it's another museum on down from it.
Yeah, the one with the trailers.
Yeah. So I was at my dad and me. He's passed away, my dad since then. We was at an autograph sign. It was about 40 or 50 drivers there. Of all the people, I hadn't seen Tim Brewer in years. He sits down beside me, and I said, how you been doing? He said, all right, we was talking a minute. And I said, I want to ask you if you remember something. And he said, what's that? And I said, something happened at Darlington. He said, oh, when I caught your tail end under the car and you act like he said, I don't remember how he said it, but he said, you slaying another like you thought I was going to walk off. I said, I did think you was going to walk off. He said, I seen you. I just stood there a little bit. But he said, yeah, you kind of like, oh, I just looking in under here a second. But I don't know what they do. I bet you do something like that now. They probably, by no, God, no, from another, they probably run you. I don't know. They probably run you off.
You might get sued by it.
You might
nowadays,
get sued. But probably. I thought that was a funny story, but you know, Junior, I don't know if Junior was saying anything or not. You know, he's gonna say, well, you know, the guy's running 30th, he might look what we doing run 28th. You're not gonna really, you know, you gotta have, if I looked at his springs and shocks, you gotta, you know, we was probably 15, 20 horsepower short. They was probably running a 391 gear, and we was running a 370. You know, I'm just saying, you just, you know, it's so many other variables went into it. You could put everything out under their car and under mine, and you still had, you didn't have all the ingredients.
Sure.
So it really wouldn't have made a difference. Still wasn't good being in somebody else's car though.
That's pretty funny there. Did you have any questions there, Tracy?
No, I was just thinking.
Yeah. All right. So
you can tell when I think.
Yeah. You may or may not want to talk about it if you want to, but did you ever have to cause a race to go into caution? Under caution.
I was thinking today we was all together. I probably about four or five times. It wasn't, you know, everybody acts like I did it lots. I did it at Martinsville. I did it at Daytona once or twice. And
why are you covering your
well,
mouth?
Well, it's funny. It's funny. He admits it because it happened all the time.
Let me tell you something. I went to Martinsville and I pulled a caution out for Gary Nelson, which he was a crew chief for Bobby Allison, was on that 22 Miller, Buick, I think.
Okay.
Might have been Monte Carlo. Yeah. But James Hilton missed the show or something, and James actually put me on to it, and he said, you want to make $1,000? And I said, how's that? And he said, Allison needs a caution quick. And I don't know how it is now, but back then, the guy had to – whoever started race, he got credit for the points. So, you know, they when they come up and said it was $1,000, and all I told Nelson was – you tell Bobby to have his seat belts loose. And I spun out when the race started. You know, Martinsville people would, you know how they used to plug up, they'd hit each other, and they'd spin out?
Oh, yeah.
I told Marshall, the only person noted besides the guy helping me, well, I told my dad about it. He came down for that race. He got where he wasn't coming as many, but that show, he was at it since it was close to home. And I said, now listen, I was at the back, so I said, I'm going to spin this thing out pretty quick.
Yeah.
I said, we need that $1,000. So the next week I spun out, and Harold Kinder, do you remember Harold?
Yeah,
he used to wear those bubble goggles in his flagman stand.
Yeah.
He was up in there and spun out. I tell you the race, I think it was a race where Rick Hendricks may have won his first race with Jeff Bodine.
That was Martinsville.
Okay. Yeah, I can't swear to about it. I might be wrong on the date and all. Mm-hmm. I know it was Martinsville.
Like All-Star Racing or something.
Yeah. So, and I may be wrong on that, but I think I'm right. So... The next week after that, where we was, Dick Beatty said, Ronnie Thomas, come to the NASCAR trailer. And I go down to the trailer, and how he would always do, if he was mad at me or not, he would always say, Ronnie, if he was ticked, he would say, son. And I went there and he said, come over here and sit down, son. I said, uh-oh. I knew what it was about.
Yeah.
So I sat down, and he said, if you did what I think you did last week, I'll park you for a while in Racing. Well, you know how it is. What are you talking about?
You
he
talking
said,
about?
Why did you spin out last week? The race starts, you spin out. And I said, Dick, I got old tires on the car. And Slick, Skip was talking about, when you talk about old tires now, a lot of people will put a lap or two on a set of tires and put them on 10 minutes later or an hour later. That's old tires. It's like Skip said, I was going down Juniors and to Petty's and some of these places. And what I do, they say go to the tire pile, and you might go back there, and they might give you 20 tires that you can run on the next week. Someone wouldn't have but 5 or 10 mm-hmm. laps right. on them. And that's what you
had. Yeah, and you looked at the wear spots, and you said, oh, this one's going to work. This one's going to work.
And save
them. And if they didn't slide them.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. and I had old tires on. I had old tires on from a race or two earlier. And they were hard, and they would harden up some. And I said, when I went down the corner, I was running a little bit too fast. And I said, when I hit the brakes, it just spun around. He said, you don't run fast enough, spin out. I thought that was so funny. But Harold Kinder was up in the flagman stand, and I was backwards in the first corner. And, you know, they would not throw that caution flag out. And I seen a leader coming out of four. And I said, I'm just going to sit here. And, of course, right before he got to the start-finish line, they waved the flag, and I started up and spun around. Yeah. So I guess they seen I wasn't going to move. But, you know, $1,000, if I'm not mistaken, right. we probably had to finish 10th or 12th to
I
get $1,000.
I questioned that on TV last night.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see, it happens all the time. It still
I said, oh, he needs money.
Yeah.
You never know what goes on.
You don't.
And then after, all of a sudden, he starts it up and he goes.
Mm.
Not that it happened, but.
Well, I mean, I remember the days of, like, there's always a code that it'd say over the radio. What was your code?
Oh, yeah.
I could remember. We've talked about a dozen, but the fellow was my crew chief then.
Yeah.
He passed away, but I was telling Skip it was something.
Like, what's your oil pressure or something?
He said, watch the oil. And I swear I believe that is what our code was.
Yeah.
I was telling him today.
Yeah.
Watch that oil pressure, and that was my thing. Because one time we was at Daytona or Talladega, and Kale needed to caution, and I knocked out a gear coming out of two, and when I got to three, and I got to middle and three and four, and I said, I think I'm running too fast, and I was trying to slow up the car without it, you know, and I got to pit road, and I was still running too fast, and I just slowed up. I said, I got to stop before I get on pit road. I just stopped before I got all the way. I was off the track, but, you know, on almost pit road, and they throw the caution flag out. But, you know, now, a lot of times, Junior, I did it for him, I don't know, a couple times. Junior liked to give you parts. He didn't like it. He wasn't much on money, but I'd go down and get parts. But
I trade you parts for a caution.
Yeah, I mean, and it wasn't, you know, it was called bartering. I can't remember. Yes. I did it four or five times for different people. And you just, hey, Buddy Arrington, people tell you, I think he was at Petty, was seven laps down at Darlington, at Dover.
Yeah.
And he made up seven laps and ended up winning the race.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, and they said Buddy showed up next week or two driving Richard's hauler. Joey Arrington would tell you if that's the truth or not. He might not tell it, but people around the sport back then would tell you it was something like that. Mm-hmm. He would stop up against the wall, and they'd throw the caution flag out, and then he'd stop somewhere around. I think Richard made up seven laps and won the race.
Okay. I'll have to ask him when I get him on the show. I called him one time. About a month ago. Yeah
tell him to tell the truth. Away. Don't lie about it. Tell the truth now.
So Dickie Dennis says, hey, he says, where can he get an application? $1,000 for causing a caution. Where can he get an application?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he caused a big one.
Yeah, Dickie Dennis caused a caution by climbing on a fence at Richmond in 2014. Yeah.
He might be one of them.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. You remember him.
You know, in 2013, y'all were talking about codes. Remember when Clint Boyer intentionally spun out at Richmond? They're like, oh, yeah, just scratch your arm a little bit. And that was his code to spin out.
That's what I always think about. Because and it happened a few years ago with the 43 car, I think was probably the most recent time. But it still happens to that, you know, this day. People call
you wonder. Cautions. You wonder if that's really the deal.
Yeah.
Or who's your buddy?
Right, and you never really know for sure now, but but you can definitely, you know, somebody will spin out, nobody's around them, and you think, okay, you know, is there a little bit more happening behind?
You know,
behind
the thing,
the
I think it would be Do we know if it does or don't go on now? But the difference between now, they got so many in-car cameras and so many cameras.
Yeah.
Could it happen? Yeah, it's a good possibility. Mm-hmm. But, boy, it would be a lot harder to get by with it now than it would 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we had two or three car teams at the time, and our team owner would come on. We sure could use a caution right now in his best broken English, if you could read between the lines. Anyway, that was always – and then the next thing you know, we'd have one of our cars in the back. Whatever car was running towards the back would spin out or just stop on the track.
Mm-hmm. So, David, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But after anything like that happened, didn't you guys have to inspect the parts and inspect everything? Whereas before, they didn't do that.
As far as what?
To see if there was something wrong or if something malfunctioned.
Well, no, because we knew that was on purpose. Typically, we always kind of knew it.
But NASCAR didn't require it sometimes?
No, I mean, because usually it was either just they would just stop on the track and just say, well, my car just cut off. Or the other thing you do is take a piece of roll bar padding with like some of that aluminum tape on it and just toss it out the window. The driver would do that, and then if they needed a caution. And then there would be, it looks like a piece of metal on the track. Hmm. Yeah. Did you ever do that skit?
Air ducts never fall off a race car either.
Right. Yeah.
So. They don't. They just don't.
Right.
Because you put them on so they seal good, especially on the shorter tracks where you'd have three on each side and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't fall off, and you see a hunk of air duct on the back. You say, how the hell did that come off?
How did that happen? Did you ever do anything like that, Skip? Did you ever have situations that you can talk about?
I'll tell you a quickie.
Okay.
Again, Joe Frazone is my friend since. All right.
Yeah.
We're at Daytona. And you got this little lagoon, you got the roll bar padding. That's when they use plumbing padding, right?
Mm hmm. Yeah.
And we're sitting in the shop one night, and Joe goes over and he takes, I don't know, where his quarter inch drill bit, and he peels it away and he drills around the seat. And that's when they didn't have the tall seats. You had the short seat and you had the headrest. And he drills a hole and he taps a 5/16 fine thread deal in it. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm messing with him. Let's use the word.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing? He takes a screw-in air valve and he screws it in there. I said, what are you doing? He said, watch this. Takes the air holes and he goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they would put the roll bars through the frames, they always capped them for strength. Okay.
Yeah.
So he'd go in there and he put air in there. It would pressure the main hoop, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't hardly nothing in there, but if you put your fingernail on it, it went psst. So every time when he went out, when I put the net up, we'd pull that foam out here so the air would not go in there. It would stay out on the pillar, right? And every time the official would come by, and he'd tuck it back in. Every single race, he'd tuck it back in before he went out. So he comes by this time and he tucks it back in and he feels something behind there. And he reaches, this is going for qualifying, and he reaches in and he he's on his radio and even he comes back and the guy comes over and over here, pull over.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing, but we got in on a provisional because they thought that we were charging the roll bars with air.
So I was wondering, you could charge it with air and then you run it into the engine somehow, but...
There's stuff. But we said, no, there's nothing wrong. What they did, they made us weld it up. But it was just the point that Joe was messing with them.
Oh.
Danny is sitting over here.
Okay.
And Blackie's brother, very innovative man, he decided that if we opened the caps on the end of the frame rails... In the front, behind the front tires,
right.
And ran a tube from there down into your head pipe that the air would go through and it would scavenge.
Okay.
Well. And they had this all figured out how we were going to do it. And I said, no, we ain't doing that. But they had it all designed because you had to have that little aluminum cap on there where the lead went in.
Yeah, I was going to say, was there no lead in there or what?
There was double rails on the left side.
Oh, I got you, yeah.
See, and both pipes come out the left side. But they thought that if they could scavenge, the air going through there would scavenge the exhaust out.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that, Dan? Yeah. We ain't doing that.
Mm-hmm. No.
But people tried lots and lots and lots of stuff.
Okay.
It was just how it was.
So how was Dan? Did he work with you then?
He was with the Blackie. Thunderbirds.
Okay.
At the end.
Okay. I got him on camera a little bit ago when it was facing that
and,
way.
And we'd work. He'd get there after his work, and I'd be out. We'd be out in my garage, and we'd be working on it. And it was winter, of course.
Yeah.
And we pulled out for Daytona like January 17th, and it was colder than heck. And we'd work till 9:30, 10, 10:30, and then we'd do the body work and move everything out of the garage, clean everything up, and then do the painting or whatever we had to do, and then sweep everything up, put everything back in the garage, and then go to bed. So Blackie'd call in the morning, and he'd call, and my wife would say, they didn't come into the house till 4 o'clock in the morning. She says, I'm not waking him up. You know, oh, all right. So then the game he would play is he'd show up and he'd call on the phone and he'd say, where's Skip? And he'd say, he's sleeping. He says, well, tell him I'm sitting in the driveway. I'm taking him to breakfast. And he did that all the time.
Oh,
you know, well, we start at 7 o'clock at Wangren's. Well, Danny and I, we're still up at 3 o'clock in the morning cleaning paint guns and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's how he was.
Wow.
And. His favorite saying was, all you got to do is.
All you got
to
do
is. He'd come down to the shop, he'd sit there, and he'd point. Well, all you got to do is.
Oh,
sounds like me.
I swear. And, yeah. And he'd be down at his big shop, and we'd all stop, and his sons as well. We'd all look at him, and we'd go.
Oh, my gosh. All you got to do is put the cam in that engine.
Oh, that he was grandfathered in?
If he came in the garage while we were working on the cars, we all stopped.
Yeah.
Y'all stopped working.
Yeah, we just stopped.
Oh, yeah. Because he's going to start giving you directions if you're working. Yeah, I got you.
But it was terrible. I mean, he had his big shop in Bloomington, Minnesota. He'd come down there after supper, and we're working. We had mm-hmm. two cars in there. We're working on the cars. And he'd sit down. We just stopped. Mm-hmm. We'd point. I'll point to the door, and he'd go, all right. He'd get... So we were loading up. Where the hell were we going when I ran it down the street? I don't remember where we were going with the Thunderbird. Thunderbird's out there. The lights are all on. The ramps are all down and everything. And we back it out, let it warm up. And Blackie lived about 2.5 blocks away. And it's dark out. It's like 8:30 at night or 8 o'clock at night. And mm-hmm. I thought, what the hell? And I get right out on Harriet Avenue, and I let her fly.
Yes.
You know, and it's loud, right? And it's 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And turned around in, come right back and pulled into the yard there, Wanger next to me in the yard, and right up the ramps, right in. And I hooked the hook and put it in there. And mm-hmm. it wasn't 2 minutes. Blackie was there. What the hell's going on? What? We didn't do nothing. But I guess it echoed for blocks.
I'd say so, yeah. You know. Oh, my gosh. Christian, what you got over there?
So, Ron Argabright says, great show, guys, but I do have two questions for y'all.
Thank you, Ranker Ron.
One of them is, what was y'all's favorite moment of y'all's career? And did y'all have any rivals or anyone that gave y'all, like, a harder time on the track? I know, Ron, you mentioned Dale Earnhardt earlier, but do y'all have any of any other rivals?
I never really, when you run like we did in Cup, we never really had a rival.
Yeah.
Just kind of kept your nose clean, didn't make any problems most of the time for anybody. All my rivalry came from late model stock racing. You know, okay. We run against Johnny Rumley and David Hyder and Jeff Agnew and the Burton boys some, Saddlers, just Curtis Markham, some of these guys. Stacy Compton back in the day, and that to me, they were my rivals, because when you're running 20th, 25th, 30th, 35th, 40th in Cup, you know, you're running with, you know, a lot of times you're running with guys in your group, and I had a certain respect for them, and they did me, because they weren't going to take me out and I wasn't going to take them out. You try to have respect for each other, but when it come to late model, it's a whole different world. We wrecked each other a lot of times, and it was all about being competitive, having fun, winning races. And it was the last, I guess, 15 years of my life as far as racing was probably my funnest time, because I got to run up front. So mm-hmm. I kind of did things a little bit backwards. I run the baby grands, or four-cylinders, for 2 years. I might have run, you know, we didn't run them all. We probably run 10 races a year. And next thing I know, I'm in Cup and no experience in running. I mean, here I'm going to Daytona. Hadn't been in a race car, but, what, I'd run a Cup car 4 times. And here I am at Daytona, and, you know, and everybody's a little nervous around you. And, you know. But, you know, I would talk to people, you know, like my dad and Bobby Wallach and J.D. and Elmo. I would talk to these guys because that's who I was going to be running with. You know, I was,
sure.
I could really kind of relate to them better than I could like a Richard Petty or a Bobby Allison, because that was a group of people I was going to be running with. So you'd kind of get a lot of times your advice from them and James Hilton and those people.
Show us your shirt to the camera here. Your dad's shirt there, Jay Thomas.
Yeah.
Isn't that neat?
There you go. Yeah, I like that shirt. That's real cool.
Yeah, he got that car. A lot of people don't know this. He got this car off of when Richard Petty went to Ford in 69 and gave up the Chrysler deal. My dad and his partner out of Roanoke, Virginia, he had a body shop, Don Robertson. They bought this car together, and I think Jimmy Cox, which he's probably listening, he'll be at my dad's crew chief for 5 or 6 years, will be at Mount Airy get-together next Saturday.
Okay.
But I think he told me it was $8,000 or $8,500 for this car, and they got a bunch of rear ends, transmissions, leaf springs. Of course, you didn't run disc brakes, then you had drum brakes.
Right.
And he said we got a truckload of stuff from the Petties when they quit.
Because they all went to Ford stuff then.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And right. In 1970, yeah. When he went back to Chrysler and they was running like 50 races a year,
mm-hmm.
My dad had two cars. He bought one that they had finished, which was this car, and then they had another car that wasn't completed. It was like 50% completed, and they got a guy by the name of Freeman Treadway from Albemarle, Virginia, that worked for Petty's, and Freeman finished it up at his home in Albemarle, so they had two cars, and my dad let Wendell, I think Wendell Scott drove it 11 or 12 races in 70 when Wendell totaled his Torino at Trenton, New Jersey in 1970, and my dad let Wendell drive it, and he had two cars, and Richard actually picked one of them up and won a race at Raleigh, North Carolina, and Columbia, South Carolina. They picked the car up and took it to, I don't remember if Jimmy and my dad or whatever, took it to Randleman, or they came in and took it back. They put their motor, transmission, suspension, brakes and all on it, and when they run it two races, won two races with it. They were dirt track races, and after the race, they give the car back to my dad, race ready. Well, he gave him the trophies, and still got the trophies, and I got a trophy. I don't know why he gave my dad the 71 from New York, and it was an owner's. So I got an owner's trophy, two winning trophies, and at the end of 70, he gave my dad his Roadrunner Superbird uniform, and we've had that thing, well, since late 71, end of the 70 season, and I've been one of these guys that we've saved a lot of our stuff. Yeah. I've traded around for some stuff, but I got so much stuff from the 50s on up through the late 90s, Cup, late model stock, and I'm just one of them guys that's kept a lot of stuff. Me and my dad didn't throw a lot of stuff away, and we've just hung on to a lot of our stuff.
Sure, yeah. Hey, Skip, tell us right quick, because we got a few more minutes. Tell us about 1976, whenever Harry Gantt drove the car for Joe Frazone, when he filled in.
It was the Laguna, and Joe fractured his wrist in the short track car at Pensacola. And that's when you had one employee. That was it.
Mm.
And I got the car all ready for Charlotte. And he says, well, you carried up there, and I says okay. So we had the big box truck and the trailer and everything, and I got everything done. I drove up there and got in the pit, and everybody helped everybody unload. That was just kind of how it was. You pulled in there and they got the car pushed off, and they helped roll the tires in your toolbox you put up on the workbench, and I'm going through my thing, and they come over, and I got it jacked up, tires are off. They inspected the whole car, went through it. You push it down, you fill it up with gas because the thing's sealed, so you don't got to check your fuel cell, and it's sitting there in the garage. Humphrey Wheeler comes down. He says, where's Joe? And I says, he's not coming. Him and Jay are coming down from up from Spartanburg in a little while. He'll be here. He come by a little while later, and he says, where's Joe? And I says, he's not here yet. So in the meantime, Joe gets there. He goes into Gasaways, and he says, what stall are we in? And he tells me, he comes down, the race car's not there. In the meantime, Humpy come down, and he says, I got a driver, and we got a sponsor for you because we're going to rent the ride out. And I said, no, I can't do that. And he says, I'll take full responsibility. And I said, I can't do that. It's not my car.
I sent a link to the show tonight to Humpy Wheeler, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he says, I'll take full responsibility, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyhow, here he gets in the car. We get him all fitted for the seat belts and stuff, and he goes out. In the meantime, Joe shows up, and the car's not in the garage. And he comes out on pit road, and Harry goes by. And he's all over me. I thought he was going to kill me. You know, who do you think you are? Blah, 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 blah. Well, Humpy settled him down. And Harry, I'm on the radio with him. I said, do a tire check. He comes in. They stop. Do the tires. He gives him the slip. He's no, give it to him. He gives me. We go back in the garage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make a couple adjustments. They made the deal. Right there, him and Joe and Humpy. And this is Harry Gant's first cup ride, the World 600, 1977. He qualified 13th and finished 9th.
Oh, yeah.
Ran the whole race. And so we're hoping to go see Harry at the end of the week.
Because
that was, he asked about a highlight. That was one of them right there.
Sure.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
And the man was so smooth, just so neat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the car worked flawless.
Yeah.
It worked flawless the whole race.
Harry Gant drove a late model stock car a few races. I don't know, different places. Cool. And in 91, I think it was, we'd go to Coburn about six times a year, and they'd have these big money pan races. I call big money, $3,000 to win, $2,500. So somebody said, you're going to get your butt kicked for the big race this week. And that's when they said, Harry Gant's coming in. They got him a ride. So he came in and drove. We won the race. I think Harry finished about third or fourth. I can't remember if it was Jeff Agnew or Johnny Rumney finished right behind me, which would have been in front of Harry Gant. And I always thought it was pretty neat. Harry come up and said, you can drive these things. I said, well, can I drive them, or have I just got better equipment I had in Cup? That's what I'm saying when a lot of these people around the country, these guys that are running, that are struggling, you know, how many people you know, everybody can't run up front in a late model, a dirt car, a cup car, any car. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be people that can pull the trigger, and there's going to be people that can't pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to figure out where that fine line is. And here's what I say. I think you could probably pick a good driver out better now than you could then, because when you got four cars that come out of Gibbs shop, or four comes out of Hendrick's shop, or four out of this other guy's shop, how do you, I'm just saying, if they're all prepared, they're running the same type car, same engine and everything, why does one of those guys always run good, another one runs good every now and then, and he'll run 20th, and he's crashing more and all? So I think it's really, in a way, easier to pick a good driver out nowadays than what it was 30 years ago, because I think everybody's in more equal equipment. You didn't have four or five cars cleaning house. You know, you had four or five cleaning house back then. Now you don't have four or five cars. It's a lot of cars, you know, can win a race.
Oh, they are now, especially this
even.
Year is exactly proven everything that you just said.
But also, you go back and you look at the guys back in the 70s before they had power steering.
Absolutely.
And the steering wheel wasn't up against their chest. It was way out here, so they had leverage.
Yeah. Yep.
And you had regular clutches, and you had drum brakes. I remember when we went from drum brakes to disc brakes, it was like, wow.
And sorry insulation for floorboard stuff to keep the heat out.
Oh, yeah. Really, asbestos with aluminum stapled around or pop riveted around it.
People
do your
get their feet burned off.
Yeah,
all the time.
And the heels of their shoes would melt and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the power steering belt fell off. I can't drive.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
You know, all right. Well, so
think,
it's changed. It's. I think that a lot of the guys, you know, they say that they work out. I'm an example, Mark Martin. You know, he's in great physical shape. And the other ones, they took wind of that, and they've got workout rooms and everything else for the guys. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that back then. They went out drinking at night in Atlanta on the Gene Granger's That's radio right. show and everything else yeah. and smoking and drinking and staying yeah. up till 2 in the morning, get back in the morning and throw up out behind the trucks and get in their car and go out and practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was, and they had arms.
Right.
Look at A.J. Foyt and Joe Frazone. There was a bunch of them. They had arms on them.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Kristen?
Well, I was going to say y'all brought up Harry Gant. 1991 was the year in September that he won like 4 to 5
That's
races
right.
that month. But I was going to say, Bryson, if you're coming to the race reunion, you should wear the Skull Bandit hat.
Yes, I do have a cool skull. Well, I actually live in Alexander County, so it's technically hidden night, but Taylorsville is where I'm from. So Harry Gant's kind of our hero around there.
Yeah,
so,
we're going down to see him towards
yeah.
him and Morgan Shepherd going to see him towards the end of the week.
So. That'll be great, yeah. And Morgan's up in Hickory area, I think so, right?
He's in Conover.
Conover.
Like,
okay.
And he's, of course, he's been fighting the Parkinson's
mm-hmm.
some. But, you know, Morgan's one of them guys, a lot of people liked him, a lot of people didn't. And I'm going to tell you something about Morgan Shepherd. Morgan was a very good race car driver, and one thing helped Morgan is he understood that chassis, and that mm-hmm. separated from a lot of people. But Morgan was just a kind of a self-made race car driver. He built cars and all and come up the hard way, but Morgan, he mm-hmm. was tough, well, same like Harry. But Harry Gant, you know, I like Morgan and Harry both, but as far as Harry goes, I don't believe I've ever heard anybody say they didn't like Harry
no.
Gant.
Nope,
I mean,
no.
he's a very likable guy.
Harry's called yeah. in. Harry called in when we had the Bandit on the show, Gail Wilson, and we had
yeah. good guy.
And we had Eddie
good
Gunn,
guy.
And he called in. We talked to him for a little bit. So this is back when the whole COVID thing was going
well,
on.
Well, whenever they go to visit, I'm tagging along.
Yeah,
really?
I'm tagging along this week.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, her dad worked for Harry Gant.
I'll have a whole other
oh, really?
Bag of Smarties then.
For many years, yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I know we're getting ready to go, right?
Yes.
I just want to say this. I just want to say one good thing about, you know, I didn't look at years ago that I do now, is I've got to meet so many friends and make a lot of friends do things like this. And I've often thought about something. People's talked about Kyle Petty, Davey Allison, and some of these guys. But I've never even said this, but I'll say it now. One thing I've got on me, I think the advantage I got over Kyle and would have been Davey Allison and some of these guys
yeah.
is I never had the pressure. You know, Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt Jr. and some of these guys, they had so much pressure on them. I mean, can you imagine being Richard Petty's son or Dale Earnhardt Sr.'s son?
Yeah.
See, my dad run middle of the pack on back. Just tried to make a dollar, make a living. I had to do the best he could. And, of course, we had a Gulf station, paid a lot of the bills. But I never had the pressure. You know, I didn't go to the racetrack. Somebody say, man, are you going to win? Your dad won 40 races.
No, you need to win.
Sure.
Yeah, you need to. So yeah. I've often thought, man, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kyle Petty, I just imagine, even Davey Allison, the pressure these guys had on them back in the day trying to, you know, you had to face it. They had to live up to the name.
Well, you look at them now, and they're still overachievers. I mean, like, you know, got Dale Jr., he's always doing something.
That's
yeah.
right.
And Kyle Petty, always doing something. Yeah, overachieving.
You got 2 minutes?
Yeah, go for it.
At the end of one of my heroes, you know, you talk about heroes. It was Kirk Shelmerdine. Mm-hmm. Known him for years. Went down at the end of his trying to make the shows, and I'd take off work and go down there and stay at Mike Feaser's in Winston-Salem and go over there every morning, 7 o'clock at the shop, and work till 8:30, 9 o'clock at night getting ready when he got the Toyotas and work on the hauler and the trailer, which sat for half the summer and fixing lights and brakes and everything else on it.
Yeah.
And went down and missed it by, what is it, 3/1,000ths of a second?
Oh, yeah.
You know? And the great expectations that we're going to make the Daytona 500 and then not make it and then go home.
Mm. Yeah,
it's such a sad – and how do you think he felt?
Mm-hmm.
By who he had been with. It's kind of
– right.
You know, he was a crew chief.
And I could go across the street. I went over and seen how they redid the pit wagons down the middle of the trailers with the drop pins and all that stuff so they didn't shake loose. I did all that down there for him and then to go and not make the show.
Yeah.
And he's a very – you know – Kurt's kind of a very humble type guy if you get to know him. And you would never know that he was as great a crew chief with Dale Earnhardt Sr. as he was. He's kind of laid back, just a darn
and he
good
he
old
claims,
boy.
He claims he's coming to Mount Airy.
All right.
He claims he's coming.
That'd be good, yeah, for sure.
And he had the prettiest driver's suit. Oh, my goodness. It was blue with the crisscross and stitching and all. Oh,
hey,
God.
I'll tell you one other thing good about this show.
Yeah.
And I've seen it. You got two young fellas involved in it.
Yeah.
And we need young people in the sport now.
Yeah.
And you got some young fellas in. Mm-hmm. That's great that some young people are involved in it.
Well, I appreciate
it. And they seem to love the sport.
Have the history.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you guys are welcome. It's great.
That's the future, you know. You got to train them up right.
Hey,
I mean, really.
Yeah.
I sound like they're my kids.
I don't know
but
it's training them up right, but it's helping to continue the legacy stories and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I have to.
Because every time somebody,
around.
We lose somebody.
That's right.
All the stories and all the history is gone. We talk about this all the time. All the time.
Right.
You know, this guy passes away. I talked to Tiger Tom 3 days ago to see if he was coming out with us, and he says, no, he's not leaving the house yet.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And when they're gone, the history goes with them.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the sad part.
That's the sad part.
Hey,
and
Dad,
everybody
that's
says,
why
you got to write this down. You got to write that down. Well, at the time, you go, nah, I can't do that.
That's why I keep begging Dad to come on the show.
Yeah, he needs to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dad.
Document his story. He's got so many stories.
You know one thing I don't like? They got that classic NASCAR deal on TV at night.
Yeah.
Let's throw some classics, not 2000 or 2021 or 2020. Let's
really
get back
classic.
To the 80s and stuff. Well, they did the deal with Dale Sr. and Daryl.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Oh, that's priceless.
Yeah, that was good.
That's what they need
classic.
To show, more stuff like that.
Did you see the last comments here, Jay?
A lot of the thing about the younger people that are getting into racing now is their classics and even the drivers they look at as older drivers are your Kyle Busches and your
That's
Denny
correct.
Hamlins. And, you know, they're in their early 40s now, but, you know, they don't understand the history. And, you know, you look back in the – even, the, you know, from the 40s to the 80s, you know, all the history between there and even into the 90s, you know, there's so much – in there that the younger generation that's coming up within NASCAR, it's great to have young people in NASCAR, but it's even more important to ensure that they know what was, you know, once there, you know, before what built the sport.
Right.
Because if you lose your foundation, it's, you know, it's not going to be good for the future of the sport.
Definitely. Yeah, you don't have to be an expert on it. You just have to know a little bit of the history on it. You know,
you just kind of got to know where you come from to get where you've gotten.
Exactly.
Yep. That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And if you listen, you learn.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you learn a little bit about this and little stories that will stay with you.
Yeah.
They will.
For sure. Y'all have to go back and read some of these comments and stuff. They've got a lot of good comments coming in.
Hey, and, we pay good.
Yeah.
We got smarties.
We're smart.
That was a good deal to bring the smarties. I appreciate that.
Definitely. Thanks for
We're going to have a whole bag of them up at Mount Mary area when we're giving out pictures and stuff, too.
And thanks for everybody tuned in tonight. I appreciate it, and I know Skip appreciates
it. This is great.
We love it. We love the sport. We love the history, and we love it. Young people are getting involved in it down here, so it's great.
Dan was so excited the day before we left.
Thank
he couldn't
you.
Even work.
Aww.
You know, he's like, we got to get out of here. I don't care if it's raining. We got to get out of here.
Will you guys do me a favor before we say goodbye? Introduce yourself, say, I'm so-and-so, and you're watching Racing Roots with Ham. Who wants to go first?
What was the last thing?
Say your name, and then say, thanks for watching Racing Roots with Ham.
Racing what?
Roots. R-O-U-T-E-S. Roots.
I'll do it.
Oh, R-O-O-T, Roots.
We have to spell it R-O-U-T-E-S.
Oh
yes, that's a whole nother story though in itself.
I kept looking at that going, that ain't right.
Yeah. Hey, this is Ronnie Thomas. I want to thank everybody for tuning in for Racing Roots with Ham. Enjoyed it.
And good this deal. Is Skip Pollock, and the same thing for me. Thanks for listening, and hope you enjoy our stories, and we hope to do it again.
Yeah,
that
sounds great. Well, y'all are doing it Thursday with the Ghost Tracks and Legends with Bill Blair.
We'll be down there. And we'll see you all maybe Saturday.
I'll see
you.
Absolutely Saturday.
You all are coming.
Even though it's going to be massive.
You're going to have your skull hat.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully I'll be able to make it. And if I do, I will most definitely be wearing a skull hat.
And you got to get pictures of our Joe for Zone racing shirts. You'll get a kick out of that.
Oh, I'd love to see that. That's cool. Yeah, and if y'all like this video, hit that thumbs up. It tells YouTube that you liked it. And maybe they'll send it out to more people. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
And we can do this again.
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah, because we got another, man, I'd like to go another 2 hours with y'all because, I mean, we could definitely do that. Because we went over. This is the longest show yet.
Really?
So by 15 minutes. So y'all did it. Y'all set the record.
We did it, huh?
Congratulations.
Record breakers.
Let's give them a hand.
That's right.
Yeah, everybody. Thank y'all for having us. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Y'all for coming in. Appreciate that.
You're a nice lady.
Thank you.
He's lucky to have you.
Oh, I'm lucky.
This is documented.
Luckiest man in the world.
Lucky to have each other.
There you go.
Nice that you're involved with it.
Thank you.
I guess I better save that sound bite and play that during each show. All right. Thank y'all for listening. Ronnie Thomas and Skip Pollock.
Played in your sleep.
on Racing Roots with Ham.
Give me one.
We'll see y'all next Monday for Peggy Flock, who is the daughter of Tim Flock, the NASCAR Hall of Famer and pioneer of the sport. So, yeah, Jocko Flocko was their pet monkey. So, we'll see y'all next Monday. Y'all have a great week. Thanks.
Real Country 550 and 92.